It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a great show we've got for you. We'll be taking a look, of course, at Google I.O., the big acquisition. Yahoo buys Tumblr for $1.1 billion. GigaOM's Om Malik is here along with Trey Ratcliffe, the photographer. We've got Ron Richards from All About Android, Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle. A great bunch to talk about the week's tech news. Coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 406, recorded May 19th, 2013. Om in Yoga Pants. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit Audible.com/TWiT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID Audible_com. And by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support for all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by SumAll. Easily connect your data from Google, Twitter, YouTube, PayPal, Amazon, Facebook, and more to gain important insights instantly, all in one beautiful interface. Start using it for free today at SumAll.com. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWiT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers your tech stories of the week. And what a big week it is. So fortunately, we have a gigantic panel of wonderful people to talk about the week that was, starting with Om Malik of GigaOM. Good to see you again, Om.
Good to be back.
Saw you at Google I.O. It was such a fun thing to run into you. You're doing great stuff.
Well, so are you.
Yeah,
Especially with your new VOD blogging effort.
Yeah, you've seen Leo Poops. Do you like it?
Leo Poops. I'm all for it. Nothing like
that. We're launching it on Monday. It's pretty exciting. Om's seen the first episode.
I pay money for that.
Well, you know, actually, you're an inspiration because you do a paywall content, don't you? And it's doing quite well.
It is, thanks to people who actually support people like us. So thank you, everyone.
And what is the name of that?
It's called GigaOM Research. Not very creative, but
I always figured that the best, if you're going to do a paywall, people will pay for stuff like that makes the money, like the Wall Street Journal and this.
I think you help people succeed and they will spend money on what you do.
Exactly.
As simple as that.
Exactly. And it's pro.gigaom.com? Is that the place to go?
Yes, sir. That it is.
GigaOM Pro for the professional. Also here from New Zealand, and we're so glad to have him. He did an amazing photo walk last night. We'll talk about it in a bit. Trey Ratcliffe.
Hello.
Wearing his glass. And now, do you have different shades of glass that you change for to match the T-shirt?
Well, no, that would be ridiculous.
So you got the baby blue glass. They probably call it something like sky blue.
Yeah, well, you know, it's actually, I figure you might as well go with a strong color and just own it.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Don't try to pretend you don't have a big blob on your face.
Yeah, just get out there with it and don't be afraid. So, plus, I think it's kind of a pretty color.
So many people get the beige or gray or whatever the bland color is. You know, I think you're right. When I get glass someday, I think I'm going to get orange, safety orange or something
like that. Well, I bet, you know, I don't think it's that bulky, but I think when it goes to market, it'll be much thinner. I'm looking back on this like, oh my gosh.
Right.
That looked ridiculous.
I think we're a long way from market, but we'll talk about that. One of the things you're doing, which is so cool,
is virtual photo walks. You did one last night in San Francisco, where not only do people come in real, you know, meet space and take pictures with you of the San Francisco skyline, and I knew you had so many great people with you, but people can watch through your glasses at home.
Well, there's a wonderful organization called Virtual Photo Walks, and their tagline is to know, to care, to act, and it's walking the walk for those that can't. So there's a lot of people that love photography, but they've just lost the ability to walk around like a lot of the rest of us. And so we do these live broadcasts. We can go through glass. This particular one, I had the help of the great Karen Hutton. She walked around with a little doodad, and she was able to broadcast live. So it was really me and Thomas Hawk. We did this together, sort of a team. And it was the night before I.O. It was the last night. But yeah, it was amazing
because
we had over 400 people came out, like physical people came out. And then we were able to broadcast live all over the internet to all the people that weren't there. And we put on headsets. They can ask us questions. It's really inclusive and nice.
I watched the video last night on Google Plus of it. And that was really, it was really something to see. And it's a lot of injured veterans or disabled people, people who couldn't, who are photographers who want to take pictures but just can't get out there. Glass seems like ideal for this because it's your point of view. I mean, they can see, but you don't always use glass.
No, you don't have to use glass. Yeah. Doing live hangouts when you're walking around a city is pretty tough right now with these because they just don't have the Wi-Fi.
Right.
It's still more dependable with another system.
Sure, that makes sense. Very cool. Also with us, the star of a new viral video that's making the rounds, Renee Richards of our All About Android show.
Ron
Richards. Yeah. Renee Richards. Was it Renee Richards a tennis player?
It's only on Friday nights.
Who is Renee Richards? He's a tennis player, right? Ron Richards, good to have you. I don't know who Renee is. Yeah.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, because I wonder if I could find this. No wonder I was searching for your viral video and I couldn't find it. It's Ron Richards. Okay. No.
It's
you wearing glass for the first time.
Yeah, so after we finished the show on All About Android this past Tuesday, Jason let me try his
glass. Holy cow!
His glass, and I proceeded to have a freak out on camera.
Have you never tried them on yet?
This is the first time I've ever seen it.
Right. Holy cow!
So, and then someone took the 10-minute clip and edited it down to about two and a half, or two minutes and 49 seconds, and you see...
Holy cow!
A cut of all my holy cows,
and... How do you go back?
I believe I said it was a life-altering experience, and some other hyperbole.
Do you still feel that way?
I do feel that way. Anybody watches All About Android... knows that I was super skeptical of it.
Yeah, you were the only one on All About Android who doesn't actually have glass that day.
Yes, it was, yeah, because I didn't even, at Google I.O. last year, I didn't sign up for it.
You know, I signed up, but Jason Howell was kind of my proxy, and I was going to get it because it's $1,500, and then I realized Jason has a new baby. Who better to wear glass?
And Gina confirmed that because she also has a baby, and she said it's amazing. She said she'll be holding the baby, and it'll do something cute, and she just says, you know, take a picture, and it does it.
Well, normally a camera would get in the way of the connection between mother or father and child. Yeah. But that baby, you see the pictures that Gina's taken of Etta, you can tell she's looking at her mom, and she's just in love.
Love is me using the directions.
How many views on this, Chad, so far? 54,000. Oh, it'll be more. And thanks to Jean-Louis for making that edit. Yeah. He's a fan.
So we were What's Hot on Google Plus yesterday. We were on the front page of the Android subreddit. It pretty much had legs. And
Ron,
holy
cow, Richards.
Yeah. My dear sister back in New York, who's not one of our tech people, she's like, oh, I hope Tosh doesn't put you on the show. She's like,
oh, you might make Tosh 2.0. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, but so I went viral. It only took, podcasting for 8 years? It just took 8 years to go
someday,
viral.
Someday. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Holy cow. Also here with us, Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle, blog.cron.com/techblog. Good to have you.
Good to be here, Leo. By the way, Renee Richards was not just a tennis player. She was a transgender tennis player. She started out a man and became a woman.
Even better.
Right. Like, I wasn't going to bring that up. Yeah. Holy cow.
By the way, we have a paywall too, and it's and so does the San Francisco Chronicle, which is our sister paper to the Houston Chronicle, and it's been a really interesting experiment, I gotta say.
Does it work?
It's still building audience slowly. I think it's what's really interesting is what it's doing to our newsroom in that we're having to come up with different types of content for the free site versus the pay site. And so it's changing the way the newsroom works. It's kind of finally, it's really getting us to think digitally from the start. And it's a, I'm really excited about it. It's making some really good changes for us, I think. And I presume it's the same thing is happening in San Francisco and San Antonio, which has also started it.
Historically, you can't get somebody to pay for something they've been getting for free.
Well, the idea is what we put on the pay site is not necessarily what you get for free. You know, every newspaper does enterprise. Every newspaper kind of does things that no one else in the market does. We'll do things that television won't do, for example, and that's what's ending up. But the commodity news, the breaking news, the things that everybody else is doing, as well as a lot more pop culture and kind of more Houston is fun things are going on the free site, and it's really two different audiences. In fact, when we look at what is happening in terms of like the most viewed stories on each site, they're two completely different things. They're different audiences.
Isn't that
interesting? I think it's working. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's fascinating.
There's nothing worse than getting a link from somebody and hitting that paywall.
Oh,
like,
I hate
that. You know, like they've.
But what we've done is when you share socially from an account, if you've got an account on the paywall and you share it out, it's a free view.
Yeah, see, that's the smart thing. They've got to realize either stuff that's getting shared socially or stuff that's getting a lot of views, take the paywall down, make it free, because you want the page views. So, you know, then everything works. Or have those services that are premium.
Yeah. $1.1 billion. It's a new number. That is how much it apparently Yahoo, we're going to find out tomorrow probably, Yahoo board, according to the Wall Street Journal, has agreed to pay for Tumblr.
All cash.
Mm. All cash? It's not a stock deal?
That's the word on the street, is that it's an all cash.
David Karp, who dropped out of high school to create the blogging platform. Tumblr's been a huge success. I fell in love with it very early. It just was such an easy way to create what, before Tumblr, was a genre called the Tumblelog. Mm. And it was hard to do in the early days. You had to get a template and all this stuff. And the Tumblr just made it very easy. And Karp raised, I think, $125 million to get a valuation of $800 million. But it's going, according to Kara Swisher, and if Kara says it's true, it must be, $1.1 billion. Is that a big number, O'Malik, or is it worth it?
It's not that big a number in larger scheme of things. You know, it's like Yahoo wants to be relevant. What's $1 billion here? What's $1 billion there? And actually, if you really look at it, it doesn't cost them a lot of money because they are spending the money they're going to make from Alibaba IPO on stuff like Tumblr. So Alibaba valuation is going up pretty rapidly. And as a result of that, they're beginning to see pretty high. They have a lot more cash to play around with.
And
23% of Alibaba, and they want to sell half of it. And Alibaba's valuation right now is about $70 billion. And if Bennett goes public next year, it's going to be worth about $100 billion. So, you know, their value, they will have a lot more cash to play with.
And these could pay off. Jason Calacanis sent out in his newsletter, he said, what, $1.1 billion? That's nothing. He says the people who are complaining about that are poor hourly employees at newspapers who aren't, for whom, you know, this is a big amount of money. He said, but for a company, Yahoo could buy 100 of these. It's the payoff potential is huge. Look what Google got out of YouTube, which they paid only a few billion dollars for and is now worth probably, you know, 100 times that. So apologies to Dwight Silverman on behalf of Jason Calacanis.
I make almost that much, so I'm fine with the deal.
That was typical Jason, right? He immediately insults somebody before he can even make his point. But I think it was a good point, which is, while it sounds like a large number, anything with a B is going to get your attention. It's not that much money, even for a company like Yahoo that's struggling a little bit. And the opportunity for Yahoo is to be hip.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Totally. I mean, if you look at, and actually as loath as I am to agree with Jason in some of his points, he did make the right assertion in his newsletter that was, you know, kids aren't on Facebook anymore. They're on Tumblr.
Right.
Like teens, 20s, they live on Tumblr.
It's a lot like the Instagram acquisition. Yes. I think Facebook looked at Instagram and said, we could lose our shirt to this company because everybody under the age of 20 is Instagramming.
Yeah, I've noticed a marked change in the last 6 to 8 months where when a funny thing on the internet gets sent to me, it's on Tumblr.
It's Tumblr.
It's like, you know, just this past week, a friend of mine sent the worst room on theworstroom.tumblr.com, and it's all photos from Craigslist of bad apartments in New York City, like $300 for a room in Brooklyn Heights or something like that.
It turns out Tumblr's a photo sharing site. We thought it was going to be about, you know, sharing quotes or sharing links. It's a photo sharing site.
And my day job, I work in comic books. I work for a comic book publisher. So much art on Tumblr. So many artists posting stuff up. We'll have, you know, like main comic book artists putting their stuff up on Tumblr before it gets up on anywhere else. Yeah, here's the worst room. This is this Tumblr is great. It's these are literally Craigslist listings in New York City for $750 in Williamsburg.
Oh. Yeah.
My friend James sent me this, and the thing is, this stuff used to be out there on WordPress, or it used to be out there.
It's
on,
so
on Twitter.
Easy to do on
it's
Tumblr.
On Tumblr. It's in 2 seconds you have a site up like that. And me as a marketer, I'm using Tumblr. Is so easy to build a site very quickly, put up your branding, have an easy way for people to submit to you. Their submission engine is really elegant, really simple, and there's just millions of people playing around on it. So
when Rick Perry said he had binders full of women before the debate was over, there was a Tumblr. Binders full of women, which is now gone, by the way. And that's exactly what Tumblr's for. Well, it's an instant place that you could do this.
When TechCrunch did the little jam on Michaela's not impressed when the rumors were that Tumblr was going to reject the offer and they said Tumblr's not impressed.
Right.
That was
a play on Tumblr.
A play on Tumblr because the Michaela's not impressed from the Olympics was on Tumblr. Like so Tumblr really has quietly become the hot spot on the web for the younger generation. It's not Facebook, it's Tumblr.
By the way, I think John Constantine got that wrong. I think Tumblr was impressed. I'd be impressed.
Yeah. It's hard not to. Yeah. I mean with that investment, only $125 million in, that's a great return.
Yeah.
So,
it was Mitt Romney, not Rick Perry. Did I say? Anyway, I confuse all those guys. They all have the same hair.
Well, Mormons do have binders full of women.
So, a good move for Marissa Meyer. Is this? It seems to me it's a good move. This is the kind of thing Marissa came to Yahoo to do.
Well, hey, I think it's.
Go ahead,
No, I made an assertion in one of my early posts. This was like a middle-aged guy hanging out with young people, trying to look hip. So, you know, if they have to spend $1 billion to do it, why not?
But will it work?
I don't know. I think at least it's not a bad idea for them to do this. Though I feel that if they were spending this kind of money, they should have gone after a company like Pinterest, which is more along the lines of Yahoo's traditional strengths, which is like, you know, more women use it, more brand centric and more wholesome in some sense of the word. And they could have made more money monetizing Pinterest much faster. But, you know, Tumblr is a good acquisition, definitely a great acquisition. I'm happy for David, who I remember him pitching me about Tumblr in 2007 in the early days of GigaOM at a coffee shop near my house. And we talked about how he wanted the whole thing to play out. And it has played out as he had planned.
Interesting.
In his early days. So pretty impressive.
He saw it going this way.
Yeah. I mean, not that he would get acquired by Yahoo. He was pretty clear about why people would share this certain way on the web.
And how old was he when you talked to him?
I can't remember. Man,
he's a kid.
Do the math. He was like 7 years ago.
Yeah, so he'd be like 17 or 18. He was a kid.
And I guess the question now is, how bad will the exodus be? Because there's always
an exodus. They say, and now Kara says they've got Karp for 4 years, locked in.
Wow.
That they're going to have the same kind of autonomy that Instagram has at Facebook. The brand won't change. It'll still look like an independent entity. And I think that's really important. If it suddenly says Tumblr by Yahoo.
Or Tumblr with an exclamation point.
That's not going to go. That's not going to fly. And I don't think that the people who use Tumblr are that wired into who owns it as much as is this the easy-to-use platform. Yeah. But you're right. It's always risky when you buy something like that.
It's giving up your baby. But 4 years. I mean, Yahoo doesn't have the best track record with these acquisitions.
That's one thing Marissa has to really turn.
Exactly. Yeah. That if it wasn't Marissa in the driver's seat, I'd be a little worried after Delicious and Flickr and all that
Terry
stuff.
Terry Semel doesn't go to David Karp and say, "Hey, we'll keep it exactly the same way, man." Yeah. We're not going to mess with it. We love Tumblr. It's going to be the same. We love you. You're beautiful, babe. I think that it's pretty clear that only Marissa could go to somebody like Dave. Apparently, she did personally woo him considerably and really said, look, you're going to get complete autonomy. We're not going to take this over. So now, it's a coincidental, I think, but tomorrow is a big announcement from Yahoo. Dwight, do we know what they're going to say tomorrow? It's not about Tumblr.
Supposedly, it's about Flickr, but I suspect that Tumblr will play into it if the deal has been done today. There is, I think, someone mentioned the idea of the exodus, and he was talking about talent, but I think you also got to think about an exodus of users, because right. If people are freaking out over the idea of Yahoo's culture versus Tumblr's culture, you could promise autonomy, but the first time, say, that a big media company comes to Yahoo and says, hey, you know, they're putting copyrighted material on there, can you take it off, please? You own it now. And Yahoo puts the Bigfoot on some hot meme. That is really going to kind of kill off, immediately will kill off the goodwill that it has with its users. There's already a BuzzFeed item up there about people who on Tumblr who are already putting Tumblogs up about Yahoo, and so
how long was
this? Is it right? Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah, and right. with such a young audience base, they're gonna cry sell out. They're gonna cry, yeah. And
if
then
they even hear about, well, I guess
well,
they're
gonna hear. Well,
at that price,
they know about it.
Yeah. They know about it.
Yeah.
So, Trey, you probably were on Flickr before you moved to Google Plus, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, Flickr used to be the only game in town.
That was where you went.
Yeah. And it's a pretty it's an older crowd there now. You know, it's been around 7 or 8 years. I
went back when they put out the app.
Yeah,
I had let my pro lapse.
Yeah,
that's not a good way to say that. I had let my profession.
Yeah.
I had a prolapsed pro account.
Yeah,
and I paid the $40 as soon as they came out with the iOS thing. I wanted to send a signal. Yeah, you continue to improve this.
I pay every month. They're good.
It's worth it.
Yeah, it's still not bad.
Yeah, but but where do you get all the attention? Is on Google Plus. That's
Google Plus and
Facebook
and Pinterest. I get a lot more interest on Pinterest than I do on Flickr. Flickr is very it's all photographers on there, which is fine.
Right.
But it's not really the general public. It's just photographers talking to photographers.
How about 500px? Same problem.
500px. It's a beautiful site, and there's amazing photographers on there. But it's an even smaller group than Flickr.
You're trying to reach viewers, an audience, not other photographers.
Yeah. Well, it's fine to talk with other photographers. That's cool to, talk shop and talk about lenses and that sort of stuff. But, I think photographers spend way too much time trying to impress other photographers. Those are the kind of people that are on Flickr, and that's fine.
Didn't used to be that way, though. Did it?
Well, it was always quite insular.
Was it?
Have you ever seen, snakes mating? It's that big ball of just nonsense.
Right.
That's kind of what Flickr's like. But
so what should she do to make it
well
better?
I think they need to do something more like Tumblr. I don't know how they could possibly fuse the two, but it allows people that can't create anything to curate.
Right.
And I don't know what percentage is on Tumblr. I have a Tumblr thing. It doesn't get much attention. I think I'm one of the few creators that inserts fresh things into the system.
That's not how Tumblr works. It's mostly reblogging other people's
so
things.
Redoing other stuff,
exactly.
It's all curation, and Flickr is all creation.
Right.
So maybe they've got some grand plan to fuse these two together.
I'm just looking to try to find some stats around Tumblr, and admittedly this is a year ago, but in April 2012 they said their Tumblr bangs out 55 million posts per day.
Wow.
Which is, and how, what percentage of that is original content versus that reblogging?
Yeah.
But a lot of it is reblogging. A lot of it is that viral network effect.
Well, and as a content creator, Trey, I think Dwight makes an excellent point. It's one thing when you're an independent, you can kind of ignore the requests of big media companies to take stuff down, which Tumblr has done. Mm. But it's another thing if you're Yahoo and you're trying to make nice with big content companies.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on Tumblr, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
Well, there's the porn there's the porn problem, too. I don't know how much of Tumblr is porn, but that's all I see.
Yeah. For example...
it's who you follow. there's a lot of adult content on Tumblr, and I don't know if Yahoo cares, because there's a lot of adult content on Flickr too. They have a safe search, and they just block it unless you agree to it.
Yeah.
So in the in the story today that All Things D did, right, there's that picture from Girls in Yoga Pants. And what's interesting
Wait
is...
Wait a minute. Girlsinyogapants.tumblr.com? Hold the phone!
So this is interesting. There's a separate girlswithyogapants.com. It's part of the People in Walmart network.
Ah.
And the stuff on Girls in Yoga Pants is much more not safe for work than girlsinyogapants.com. They have much more freedom to kind of be, have a lot of nudity and raunchiness.
But they're wearing yoga pants.
On the regular website. It's the same site. Yes, they're wearing it. Sometimes they're wearing yoga
pants. Oh, okay.
They aren't always wearing
it. As long as the people of Walmart keep their clothes on, I don't...
Let's keep them out of the yoga pants.
On. Let's do that.
Don't cross the streams, man. That could really be a problem.
But Leo, one other thing about Flickr. Yahoo, Marissa Meyer has said that they need to emphasize mobile. They need to crack mobile. Flickr is has ignored mobile for a long time. But that app that they released, which got you looking back at it again.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling that's the key to what they're going to do is that they're going to make Flickr much more friendly to mobile devices. After all, the number one phone on there right now is the iPhone. It's that's a camera phone. That's a smartphone.
It's the number one phone in the world, according to Apple.
Right. And so what's happening is that people are taking more and more pictures with non-traditional cameras, and I think that's what Flickr is going to emphasize tomorrow. Because they talk about sharing on the invitation, and I think this all has to do with mobile.
That might be how you handle the problem of no new content on Tumblr. Yeah. Om, you were going to say something?
I just was saying where I come from, the land where yoga came from, there was no such thing as yoga pants. just making it up.
What was it? A yoga loincloth, I think.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
So, that's a little more interesting.
Trey says he's starting a new Tumblr. He just started it already. That's how easy it is. Called Om in Yoga Pants.
Yeah. It's
not
going
to happen.
It's already big.
Yeah. The world doesn't need to see that. That's like a natural contraceptive.
But do you do yoga? You look like you do yoga.
No, I do meditation.
Meditation. That's very good for you. Yeah.
Because I got really angry about things, so I need to meditate.
Really? You're such a sweet guy. So you used to have a temper before all of this.
No, I just see a lot of stupidity on the web, and then I just lose my cool.
Ah, the web. That's the problem right there.
That is the problem. Yeah.
Stay off the web.
Stay off the web. It's just trouble.
Really, we've made a horrible mistake here with our careers.
Hey, we're going to take a break. We've got a great panel. Om Malik from Giga Om, Trey Ratcliffe of StuckInCustoms.com, great photographer Ron Richards from All About Android. What's the name of the comic book company?
Work for Image Comics.
Image Comics.
They do The Walking Dead.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is such a good comic.
Yeah. As well,
wow.
A bunch of other great ones, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like Saga. Yeah.
And from the Houston Chronicle, the poorly paid but awfully good looking Dwight Silverman. Great to have you all. We're talking about our sponsor today, Audible.com. I just downloaded the Audible app for Windows 8. It is so beautiful, the Metro app. They've got apps now for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone. It's a great way to browse your content. My library, I've been an Audible fan. These are the best audiobooks in the world. I've been an Audible listener since 2000, so I have 500 books now in here. And these are just some of the... by the way, Trey Ratcliffe,
You leveled up as my friend?
I have leveled up. Because I read both of Patrick Rothfuss's Kingkiller Chronicles. In fact, we had Patrick Rothfuss on Triangulation. He's a wonderful guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah,
indeed.
He talked about you quite a bit.
He's awesome. He has a charity. We might even go to Nepal together.
That's
for
right.
A charity.
He talked about that.
Yeah. As a great reader for that book, isn't it?
The Nick Podell. Yeah. In fact, I really enjoyed it. So I just finished. There's the book one of the Kingkiller Chronicles. Which is called...
The Name of the Wind.
Name of the Wind. And I just finished The Wise Man's Fear, as you can see right here, which is book two of the Kingkiller Chronicles. I'd highly... you could get both of these right now absolutely free if you wanted to. All you have to do is go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month. Well, two credits a month, but these are two credits. Most of the books are a single credit. And you could be listening within minutes... And I think that... Did you read it in text first and then listen to it?
No, I went all audio.
I do, too.
Now I'm on the evolutionary void.
Oh, that's really good. You're starting to listen. You know, see, this is one of my favorite authors. I just got Peter Hamilton's newest, The Great North Road.
Oh.
Yeah, they've got all the Peter Hamilton books.
Who's reading it?
Toby Longworth. Who's reading the Evolutionary Void?
You know, that guy with the super
deep voice.
What is his name?
I listened to it on Audible, too. The Void trilogy is amazing.
That guy. You know that guy with the voice. He is smooth.
They have some of the best readers in the world. The temporal void, the evolutionary
John
void.
Lee.
Been strengthened to that a level guy. That would allow her to keep up.
Oh, he's got that great British
Panther
accent
on its
too.
Kill run, and that was before bionic augmentation.
Do you have this experience when you're listening to an audiobook and then you go back and listen to that same passage? You can remember where you heard it the first time.
Yes,
is that weird?
Yeah, I tie it. I think there's something.
Something going on in the brain.
Yeah.
Because I can, like, I was the other day, I was listening to audiobooks when I was doing laundry, which I often do when I'm folding the laundry. And then I went back and re listened to it in the car, and I was like, I was there again folding laundry.
That's a great
memory.
Is that
bizarre? Yeah. I know, I don't understand it. Anyway,
yeah.
That's not really a selling point, but I remember what corner, what street corner I was turning on when I, it's the strangest thing. I guess there's, and this is, some people get mad at me for calling it reading. It's the same words that you would get if you read a book, but you're listening, and there's something about the way you consume a book when you're listening. It becomes, you ingest it in a different way. And maybe it's just me, but obviously it's Trey too, but there's something about the way it gets into your brain where you're just really living the book. Mm. I think that's really part of what it is. So many great books on here. Here's a good one. Alan Bennett, The Uncommon Reader. Did you ever listen to any Alan Bennett?
Mm-mm.
British guy. I'm sure Om knows Alan Bennett stuff on the BBC. It's wonderful. I don't know why I said Om might know it, but for some reason I feel like you do. How about this? The guy who did The Kite Runner. Did you ever listen to The Kite Runner?
No.
His new book is coming out May 21st. Khalid Hosseini's And the Mountains Echoed. And that's this is another thing that's great about Audible. The new books all come out on Audible now, as well as in the bookstores at the same time. Audible, here's the deal. Go to audible.com/twit2. Sign up for the Platinum account. You don't pay anything for the first 30 days. You get two books free. Cancel at any time in those first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. But the books will be yours forever. As you can see, when you get an Audible subscription, this is like my entire life. I own all these books. I can listen to them anytime. So many great books. Audible.com. Oh, Neil Gaiman. I got a ton of Neil Gaiman.
Nice.
I love his stuff. He's got a whole series on Audible where he's discovering books and having them brought back. Just great stuff. Not just his stuff, but other stuff. Audible.com/twit2. Highly recommended. Get the King Killer Chronicles. I'm leveling up.
Yes. Wonderful.
That's why I listened, because you said you can't be my friend unless you
like
these books.
No, I said you're right. You level up.
That's some harsh friendship there. You got rules.
He's tough.
The velvet hammer.
But you're right. If you don't like these books, there's something wrong with you.
I was not saying anything quite that bombastic, but no. But I mean, if you like them, then we're like instant friends.
Yeah, there's something about them, and Patrick is a wonderful guy.
He's different, isn't he?
Did you meet him before you read the books or after you read the books?
After I read the books.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He's not what you'd expect. He spent his whole 20s like writing books.
Yeah, he's
not unpublished.
Like 10 years building this world.
Yeah.
And you can tell that there's a lot of depth there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
All right, so the other big event of the week was Google I/O. That's of the past week. We're going to get to that in a moment, but you know, this would be a good time to look ahead at the week ahead. I think Tom Merritt has something for us. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Leo, here's a look at the week ahead. Some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on for Tech News Today. Of course, starting today is YouTube Comedy Week. If you don't think it's funny, talk to my wife. Monday, May 20th, the Asus GTX 670 DirectCU Mini Graphics Card is set to come out at $399. Tuesday, May 21st, the Asus Transformer Book Hybrid PC is to be released. Also, the next-gen Xbox official announcement at Microsoft's Redmond campus. And probably riding on that hype, the Razer Atrox Arcade Stick for the Xbox 360 opens pre-orders. Wednesday, May 22nd, HP has their earnings announcement. Thursday, May 23rd, the Microsoft Surface Pro goes on sale in the UK. Also on Thursday, Salesforce and Pandora announce their earnings. Friday, May 24th, the Sony Xperia Tablet Z is scheduled to ship. And Saturday, May 25th, big day for geeks. It's Geek Pride Day, celebrating the release of Star Wars. It's Towel Day. And for Terry Pratchett fans, it's Glorious Revolution of the 25th of May. That's all coming up on Saturday. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
You'd think Pratchett, Lucas, and Adams would have gotten together and not had it all be on the same damn day. Now you got to wear a towel, a duck. It's crazy. Well, anyway, thank you, Tom Merritt. You can watch TNT Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC for your daily dose of tech news live. And we will be doing live coverage of the Microsoft announcement on Tuesday, beginning at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC, right here on twit.tv. The Xbox Infinity.
It's going to be huge.
Are you excited?
I'm pretty excited. Yeah. It's always fun to see what.
I can't wait. In fact, I've been waiting to decide whether it should get a PlayStation 4 and Xbox Next or whatever they're going to call it. I'm just waiting now.
Did you see that YouTube video? And I apologize if you guys already talked about this, but it's, you know, those Hippo projectors that 3D map the room and can project on top of the room?
No.
Oh my gosh. Someone knows what I'm talking about, right?
Well, I'm just going to search for Hippo projectors.
Okay. I'll see if I can find it. Because what they would do is so you're playing the video game, and they project the video game on the outside of the room, and they remap the room.
So you feel like you're actually in it.
It's immersive. It's super.
Yeah, you can see like the shelves and the flowers like vibrating.
Oh, we did talk. When did we talk about this, Chad? Whoa. Was this on one of the shows?
We talked about this on This Week in YouTube.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
So you think the Xbox Next will do this?
Well, I don't know. They got to do something cool.
That would be cool. I would run out and buy this immediately.
Now watch this. When they do this one thing, when they take a shot and the whole room vibrates. Look at that. Isn't that wild?
Because you don't need to have screens everywhere. Yeah. There's just enough surfaces. If you turn the lights down, that you could put something up there.
They can't just make it higher res. It's got to have some
immersive
X-factor.
Immersive.
That might be too much for me.
You think that's expensive? That's a prototype from Microsoft. It's going to cost some money.
That's pretty
cool. Yeah. Well, we live in an interesting world. Here you are sitting with a camera on your forehead. So, you know,
it's more than a camera, I'd like to point out.
What else?
It's directions. It's searching. It's
email.
It's email. It's text messaging. It's really, I'm continuing my role as the evangelist for Google Glass, even though I don't even own one. But it's more than just a camera.
You've had it for how long, Trey?
Oh, less than a week.
Okay. So it's too early to say how you're using it, probably.
Yeah, but it's really wonderful getting notifications all the time. I've taken so many more photos, and I'm sharing them a lot privately with my family or just close friends.
Well, it's cool. As you travel, your family's in New Zealand. You can say, hey, here's what I'm looking at. Here's what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They say, actually, in that keynote, this was surprising. And
the 3.5 hour keynote, which they barely mentioned glass, I might add.
I don't think they mentioned it at all, actually.
Yeah.
But buried in the middle of there, Vic had this sort of throwaway line, but it was that over half of the sharing on Google is not public.
Wow.
And I believe that because I share a lot of stuff just with my friends and family. It's nice.
And the way Glass is handling, it's picking up your circles in Google Plus. And when I was using Jason Howell's Glass, and I took a photo, and then I said share, and it was like family, friends, all about Android. Like he had his circle set, and it's super easy to pick the right group and share a photo. Like,
but they're not
that
great pictures.
I disagree. Au contraire.
You actually posted an HDR from your Glass.
I did.
How much post processing did you do to make that look good?
I post processed unapologetically.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, no, I definitely post processed, but you know,
they're all taken from your upper right eyebrow.
Well, that's where my eye is. What's unusual about that? It's sort of a third retina that can capture it.
You're a good photographer, so no matter what they give you, you're going to get great pictures. But I would point out that in the hands of somebody like Robert Scoble, it's a lot of bad snapshots.
Well, you do see a lot of bad snapshots out there for sure, but you see the same kind of thing with Android phones, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You see some crappy Android or iPhone shots, but you see some amazing ones too.
Well, Robert's a pretty good photographer though, and there's Kevin Kelly.
Yeah, he came out to the photo walk.
Yeah. Now these look gorgeous. How much work do you have to do?
Well, very little. A lot of this just ran through Lightroom, and I might throw a preset.
You have some presets.
At it.
I have all your presets. I love them.
Thank you.
Yeah. I like the photos of you taking a photo with another device.
Yeah, people seem to like the shots where you've got your hands out there doing something.
Oh, see, the first person.
They're pretty fun. That's Scoble in a shower of sunlight.
With his shirt on, apparently.
Yeah.
Did you see a lot of glass at Google I.O.?
There was so much glass all over San Francisco.
Did it bother you? Nick Bilton was apparently kind of skittish about the whole thing.
I don't go to public urinals, so I don't really know how that works.
Where do you pee? Wait, bring one with you?
Yeah, have you seen Dumb and Dumber? Remember when they're in that
car? You don't go to public urinals. Well, for those of us who unfortunately don't have our own urinals with us, there were people in the men's room. This is what Nick was complaining about. You have that wink thing on there,
the
right?
I do. Yeah, I can wink and take a picture.
It's a hack that lets you, because it's not built
really
in.
It's not a hack. It's a side-loaded APK. Yeah.
And what's weird about Nick Bilton thing is that Nick, you know, wrote this book called I Live in the Future.
Yeah,
and here's
apparently
how
not.
It works. And he's all about kind of this, you know, being living in the future. But his descriptions of these are clearly, he obviously was unsettled. Particularly the one that struck me was where he was watching a cluster of people who were all staring up in the sky with their glass, apparently all looking at the same thing. And it was just really creepy to him.
It's a little one of us, one of us.
Yeah, right, right, right.
I don't know. I mean,
Look, I think this whole thing is inevitable, right? Like the way we are going, whether this is glass or whatever it becomes in the future, that's inevitable. You know, from whatever little time I spent on the glass, I think it's just the glass is where the Apple Newton was in comparison to the iPhone.
Very early
days. I think there's
a
whole lot of work which needs to happen. It's an interesting idea. I applaud Google for actually pursuing this with so much vigor and money. And you know, this something will come out of this. I don't quite know if this is the precise form factor. I am very excited about the possibilities of what can be achieved due to wearable computing. And this is just one manifestation of it. So we shall see. I did try it for a few minutes. They, you know, borrowed it from a friend who had one, and I had trouble mostly because of my eyesight, and I couldn't really see much because of the way my eyes are, and so I had trouble actually trying to even use it just for even the basic tasks, so not even taking pictures, just to make sense of the menus and to read the time and everything. So I'm kind of wondering how I'm going to get and, you know, try these out in the future.
You know, it's an extension of what we're already doing, which is carrying around a little pocket computer that's always connected. It's always got a camera. The only difference is it's on our face instead of our hands. Mm-hmm. But we're already doing – it's really more of a form factor than anything else, right?
And I think we'll see it integrated. I mean, like, Ohm, you're wearing glasses. There's no reason that Google's Glass technology can't be integrated into already, you know, glasses that already pre-exist. We were at – after we did the All About Android last week, Gina and Jason and Chad and I went out to dinner. We were talking about it. We were talking about the price point. And we're saying,
it's way too expensive.
Right now it's way too expensive. But in a year from now when the consumer one, you know, can they keep the price point down to the point where people want to try it? And I think in the current model, no, because it just looks so custom. I think it's going to be expensive. If they get it down to $100 and they get it smaller, like you were saying, going to be less intrusive and less more of this thing hanging off you, I see it's got legs.
Yeah, I think so too. I disagree with Ohm because I think I do think it is a game changer. It's a totally new category. It's fun. It has that intellectual element of fun. I'm always feeling little vibrations back here, a little ding, so I know things are incoming, and I do not have to go through the trouble of picking out my phone and looking at it. And I noticed directions, like I was going to Lululemon in San Francisco, and I was looking at other people staring at their phones while they're trying to find their way, and I'm just walking like a human through the streets, and I have this beautiful overlay.
Don't call it like a human. You've got a thing on your head.
You're slightly looking
upwards. There's nothing human about it.
Okay,
like a Borg.
But a lot of glass people say that. Oh, no, this is so much more natural. Instead of being emasculating and looking at your phone, but that's not really any less.
I don't know. I disagree. That is a little weird, though, don't you? I mean, you kind of get used to watching people walk around like that.
It's terrible. But, I mean, I think just because the screen is now, I don't have to look down, doesn't mean you're no longer, that you're more connected, more human.
We're going to have glasses look like Ohm's. You know, I wear prescription glasses. Yeah. It'll just be in there.
Yeah.
And we can just touch the sides, and we can just move our head around to interact. And
I mean, the thing we have to recognize is that we have a constant stream of information coming out of us at a daily, on an hourly, minutely basis. We carry our phones. We carry laptops, we carry tablets, we've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we've got Google+, we've got all these things coming at us. So that information's coming, and it's up to you to decide to take the glasses off. It's up to you to decide to put the phone down.
And I think etiquette and, you know, the mores of society will determine that. I'm not too, unlike Nick, I'm not too worried.
Who cares? If somebody, on your head when you go into the bathroom.
If somebody wants to take a picture of my junk, they're more than welcome to. Who cares?
I've already did.
It's Tumblr. It's not gonna be on Tumblr. but you're gonna see. I mean, like my reaction, you know, and we're all joking about the video and the hyperbolic reaction I had to it. But you know, I'm of a generation that grew up being told we were gonna have flying cars, like that we're gonna live in the future. And honestly,
it ain't gonna happen.
I don't think that's gonna happen. Yeah. But this right now was the closest to Star Trek I've seen in my generation. That was the moment where I was like, oh, wow, this is the future.
I would agree with Ohm that wearable computing is the future. Who knows what the form factor is? This is the Newton. Scoble called it the Apple II. He said, the first time I used an Apple II, I saw something was happening. It was obvious. And I think that's probably the case. And Ken from Chicago in our chat room said there is a difference between holding in your hand and wearing it on your face. He says it's like going from a video game that has 100 millisecond latency to a 1 millisecond latency. It's all about speed. It's all about it's there. It's with you. It's as you're working. And I love the idea of kind of like the Daniel Suarez Damon having a heads up view of people and where I see information about them.
Well, I think about it, the practical use. I mean, we always talk about driving. And here I was driving over. I was over in Vacaville, and I had to cut over. I've never been around here, so I had my phone, and I'm driving. I'm constantly looking at the map for the driving. If I had glass on, I just had a map in front of me, and I'd have to look away from driving.
Yeah.
Then that might be a little safer. You know?
Yeah, no. So, I think it's probably going to be illegal to wear glass while you're driving. That might be my guess. But
I hope law enforcement is smart enough to know that it's actually more dangerous to be looking down in your lap or looking at some crappy old GPS system that so many cars have that are slow at updating.
The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, or NHTSA.
Click it or ticket.
Has recommendations. They say you shouldn't be distracted for more than 12 seconds total, and no more than 1 or 2 seconds at a time. In other words, they say it's okay to look down for 1 or 2 seconds, but you should keep your hands on the wheel and the eyes on the road. This is the recommendation they just came out, which will probably be somehow enshrined in law. And the total distraction shouldn't total more than 12 seconds for any whatever given hour. I don't know.
There's no reason why Google can't work with the traffic and the law, you know, to pick up your speed and limit what functionality the glass has.
You can't even
use
a Kindle on an airplane taking off. I doubt very much they're going to allow you to wear your
glass. Your brain is incredibly plastic, and I think we are changing. You know, our brains are changing.
That's
we're so good at seeing imagery. You don't even have to really look at it after a while. It's just kind of hitting your retina, and you just kind of know, okay, I'm going straight. Looks like I turned.
So that's
in about
interesting.
2 minutes.
I haven't used it enough. Like Ohm, I've only used it for a few minutes. Haven't used it enough.
It's not like you have to keep looking at it all the time. Like you have to look over at your
console. But it turns off all the time. Doesn't it?
Not when you're doing directions.
Not when you're doing directions.
On.
It stays on.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. I can't wait to see where
it's
it goes.
Fine, as long as you don't go on a trip longer than 3 hours, you'll be fine.
Or to the bathroom.
Yeah. Just to make one more point.
Yes.
This is a device which takes attractive people and just makes them unattractive. Just make...
It's a very subjective thing, Ohm.
I actually tried it with 3 people, and they all had the same reaction to it. So
look at Trey. He's a good-looking fella.
Come on. Trey is looking like a dweeb right now.
Well, and that's the thing. Like,
I guess you're right.
When I posted that I loved it, one of my friends said, it still looks ridiculous. And I said, oh, no, I'm not
that's
disagreeing.
Just we're not used to it.
Yeah, exactly.
You get used to anything. I think
Trey, take him off for 1 minute, please.
Okay, this is Trey without glass.
Come on, look at the guy now.
Nice looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Got a good smile, little crinkle on the eyes.
Yeah.
And now put him on.
Okay.
Now put him on. Geek. No, you look, no, you know what? I'm more scared of you. You look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You look like the Terminator. Dwight, have you? There you go. But that's, you know what, though? That's a relevant picture Chad just pulled up of the guy from like Wall Street with the big phone. That's what cell phones look like, but that didn't mean they were a bad idea.
Yeah.
They just got better looking.
Right. No, I am not that embarrassed to wear these around.
I would be.
You know, I actually feel okay walking around the streets.
Really?
I'm
Do
not
people
self-conscious.
Say stuff?
Because, look, actually, when I walk around the streets, people smile. They're excited. They're
like
whoa, I think I know what that is. They get really excited. I've never seen anything like this. They want to try it on. They get really excited. They're like, what is that nerd doing?
Well, it definitely
catered. That's not the reaction. They're like, that is cool.
It definitely caters to the you know, the early adopter, the first, you know, kind of the person.
Well, it's $1,500. It's ridiculously out of.
I tell you what. Yeah, young people on the street, my age and younger, they generally think that it's very interesting and cool, and they smile. Older people are like, what's happening to our world?
Don't look at, please don't look at me when you say that. That's so mean.
I definitely I wasn't surprised that I was enthusiastic about it when I remembered that in sixth grade I thought it was a good idea to take a briefcase to school.
Right.
So that group of people this is going to go to, and then it will, you know, then it will get slimmer, it'll get easier, and then it'll get accepted.
I would immediately accept an optic nerve implant. I would have no trouble about that.
Well, that's
what
stages
I want.
Down the road.
Right
there. Yeah.
I hope it's before.
So the question is, you know, you're walking around San Francisco or you're walking around Silicon Valley and you're getting that reaction. What happens when you're walking in downtown Des Moines, you know?
They just cross the street to the other side. They say, I don't know what's wrong with that guy, but I'm not walking down the street next door.
First off, you stay out of the saloon.
I haven't tried glass yet, but it's clear to me that it is the next important and evolutionary step. And yeah, it's version 1.0 of this. And I think that society will ultimately, you know, adapt to it and we'll say, oh, you shouldn't be doing that or you shouldn't be doing that. The problem, I think, where a lot of people are nervous about it is look at how rude etiquette is around smartphones. You know, people will stop and check their smartphone while you're in the middle of a conversation. And I think people look at kind of that behavior and say, what kind of rude behaviors will something like glass bring us? I don't think people are concerned anymore about people walking down the street. They don't think it looks weird standing down looking at your smartphone. I mean, when I see it on the street now, I don't even notice it. And so the strangeness of glass, just seeing it, won't last. But the concern is, if we're giving up our social etiquette for smartphones this well, what happens with glass?
I think, you know, one thing I would like to point out that most of these new technologies we get used to them really, really fast if they impact us as individuals. I think the biggest challenge with glass is that it has a bearing on how it interacts with other people. And I think that is why you will see some sort of, you know, adoption curve, which will be much, you know, it'll be adoption will be much slower compared to some of the other technologies, because it does impact other people. You know, the Nick's article, you know, jokes aside, is actually it points to that like people get uncomfortable when technology impacts them. So it's not a bad, you know, idea, or it's not a bad, you know, direction for the world of technology. It just, there is some sort of, you know, careful thinking which is required as to how we as a society are going to adapt to this and how people are going to adapt to it. So that's, I think that is how I think about it when I think about Google Glass.
Well, and in addition to that, it does impact people, but it also, I think the next year is going to be the key thing in terms of what applications get developed for it, because those who watch the All About Android video picked up on the fact that I said after 10 minutes, I said, okay, great, now what?
Yeah.
Like I hit a wall with it. And so how do those applications get developed and use the technology, and then how does it impact the way we communicate with people, and are we willing to overcome the physical impediment of this thing on our face in order to stay connected to our family more or stay connected to work more?
But Trey, you're a photographer. You probably face this all the time just with a camera. When you pull up a camera to take a picture of people, people react differently. Some people get squirrely.
Yeah, there is a certain
etiquette.
There's an etiquette that comes with taking a photo of strangers.
Right.
And
I think we can adjust to that.
Either you're socially well adapted and you can, you know, you can still make eye contact with someone and they know that you're a good-hearted person and you don't mean them any harm, and it's all right. You don't, you know, photographers, we don't let technology get in our way of connecting with another human.
Mm.
And there's no reason that a little bit of technology can't keep us from being as human as we ever have been.
I think the biggest announcement, which got kind of underplayed in my mind, was hot wording. And we're going to talk about that. To me, that was the Star Trek moment. That was the moment where I said, we live in the future.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in just a moment. Great panel. Om Malik from GigaOM, Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle, from All About Android, Ron Richards, and Trey Ratcliffe. Stuck in customs. Except you're not. You like travel everywhere all the time. Customs doesn't even slow you down.
Currently, actually, I just got rejected from my Chinese visa. I'm supposed to be in China tomorrow.
I've never heard of anybody getting rejected.
Yeah, I got rejected
three
times.
What did they say? Three times?
Wow. Three times. Twice here in San Francisco. In fact, Curtis, who we met before the show, he got escorted out of the Chinese consulate.
Was he wearing glass?
No.
Because I would reject you if you're wearing glass.
No.
Really?
Yeah, it's been a real problem.
Well,
it's
that's
hard.
Too bad.
Sometimes you have, but I mean,
but
I feel bad.
You've been to China before.
Yeah, I've been there several times.
Yeah.
But I feel bad for people. People have the same problem coming to the U.S. They have trouble getting visas.
Oh, absolutely.
Visas are ridiculous. It's so anachronistic. Yeah. Just let countries should just let people move around. Come on.
Well, I hope you get in because, as Dave Bell's saying in the chat room, we've been looking forward to the NEX-7 in China experiment. Yeah. Trey has temporarily foregone his D1.
My Nikon D800.
D800? Really?
Yes.
You switched to the D800? See, I'm so behind the times.
No. I've always used a full-frame Nikon camera, which is a big DSLR, and I wrote an article, quite controversial, that I'm actually going to switch to this for a month. And in the beginning
this
of the article...
This is one of those mirrorless APS-C sensor.
This is a Sony NEX. And actually, in the beginning of the article, I said, look, Sony's not paying me. They're not advertising with me. I paid full price for this thing. You know, life's too short not to use the best. And I think that I can produce just as good of photos with this as I can a giant DSLR. This is exactly 5.9 times smaller than a giant DSLR. And it can do most everything else.
And you were carrying the giantest of the giant DSLRs.
It was a big son of a gun.
Yeah.
And
what lens is that?
This is the new lens. This is the 10-18.
Nice.
On a 1.
Pretty wide.
5.
Ooh,
factor,
very fast.
If you want to get...
not 1.5.
Not F1.5. If you want to get a little geeky, it actually is 15-27 with the crop
normalized.
Factor.
Normalized, yeah.
But it's a wonderful situation, and...
you've been taking great pictures, but you take great pictures with a 5-megapixel glass, so you can't go wrong.
Yeah, you can't listen to this guy.
I know. It's not the camera, it's a photographer.
I bought the same camera at his recommendation, and my pictures suck.
You know, I try to use the same pen Ohm does, but my writing sucks. I don't understand it.
I'm using the same mic as you are using. I can't
I can barely understand Ohm.
Actually, Ohm is a pretty good photographer. Ohm.co is blog. Nice stuff, actually.
No, he puts good stuff on Instagram, too.
Yeah.
But, like, I look at what you do, Trey, and I just feel like my life is completely worthless. Like, what am I trying? Why am I even bothering you? Like,
I give up.
Don't know how to cook or something.
Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix. If you're in the IT biz, if you're the superstar of IT, this is the tool that will help you go to the next level. If you've been thinking about perhaps becoming a managed services provider, or if you just got to do support in an office, software support, you know problems happen, unexpected user issues, PEBCAC. I won't tell you what that is, but the IT pros know what that is.
Serious.
PEBCAC. It could be a real problem. network and server complications, viruses. It's all so challenging, so stressful, but GoToAssist with its 3 modules could come to the rescue. You've heard about GoToAssist remote support, the best number one remote support solution in the world for the last 10 years. Just fast, easy to use, unattended support, remote support from small devices, support devices. Now they've got monitoring, which means you can get in there and you can figure out what's on that network, everything, hardware, software, everything. And then set up a dashboard that lets you proactively keep track of what's going on. Everything from network performance to how much space is left on the hard drive. You get instant messages, emails, text messages warning you when there's trouble in the offing, which makes you look like a support hero because you swoop in, you fix it with the remote support. It's all better. Nobody knows that you are the king, except that everything works just beautifully. And then the service desk lets you keep track of tickets. You can do changes, installations. Everything's there. These are 3 modules every IT pro needs. They're all cloud-based. It's very easy to use on any platform, for any platform. And I'm going to get it to you for 30 days free. So that's a pretty good deal. All 3 modules. Make sure you check all 3 checkboxes so you can try them all out. Go to assist.com. Click that green, or I guess it's blue, try it free button, and use our offer code TWIT. Go to Assist from Citrix. It's the IT guy and gal's number one tool ever. Eva. So I thought the hot wording was a mind blower. And I was sitting here feeling like Louis C.K. We're sitting in the future and everybody doesn't even know it. Yep. So I can see there's a little controversy. It was Google Vice President Joanne, I can't remember her last name, comes on stage and without pressing a button, without saying anything, she just says, okay, Google. And she explains, I'm going to go on a trip to Santa Cruz. So she asks, what does she say? She says, what's going on in Santa Cruz?
Show me things to do in Santa Cruz.
Show me things to do in Santa Cruz. Boom. Now, I don't think this was canned, because right before she did it, she said, "Now, I just got to warn you, this is a network-challenged environment. This we just shipped this morning, so I don't know how well this is going to work." Well, it worked flawlessly. After she asked, what is there to do in Santa Cruz, she said, "How do I get there?" And by the way, Google's talking back to her. This is on the desktop. Google's talking back to her. So there's a nice female voice saying, you know, it's going to take you 2 hours and 32 minutes. You go this way. Lots of artificial intelligence, context-sensitive search. She says, my youngest might be too short to ride that wooden roller coaster, the Big Dipper. Let me ask. Hey, Google, how tall do you have to be to ride the Big Dipper? You must be 4'9". It was mind-boggling. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that you're reacting so strongly to it, because I wasn't that surprised. One of our predictions on All About Android was that we were going to see more integration of Google Now-esque functionality.
Yeah, some of the results were Knowledge Graph or Google Now-style cards.
Exactly, yeah. So Google Now, for those who don't know, is the Siri-like application that came out with the latest version of the Android operating system.
Google Now, I can officially say, kicks Siri's butt.
Way superior. It's awesome. Yeah, yeah. Because not only is it a entry point to talk to your phone or now to your desktop and get search results, but it preemptively gives you information based off what you search for, what you're looking for. So, for example, today I just Googled quickly the directions to here, and then on my desktop, and then I go to my phone, and it's already got a card
it's
up
a card.
With directions to Twit. And it just works. And so I didn't know for a fact, but I was pretty sure that we're going to start seeing that move to the desktop. And it was really elegant, especially after they had that demo fail with the connected game. Video game stuff. The fact that it was live and worked, you know, proved that it was in a live environment. And it was solid. It's solid. So.
I feel like that is the future of search, but I could see how some people might be nervous because I guess the browser is listening to everything you say, right? Waiting for OK Google, just like you say OK Glass.
Yeah. It was amazing. And speaking of Google Now, that's even in here.
Yeah, you have it there. You could swipe those cards. Yeah.
I came out of Moscone Center. It knew it was dinner time.
Yeah.
And it suggested 5 sushi restaurants. It knows I like sushi. And they were all in walking distance. It was eerie, but awesome eerie.
It's the potential of the search results that we've been putting into Google for what now 10 plus years. Yeah. When I got Google Now for the first time I opened it up, the first card was the Mets score. Mm. It knew I was a Mets fan from just by my years of searching for buying tickets and things like that. You know, and then the further integration, and people get freaked out by this, but this is the way we make technology work for us. You know, like in Gmail, you get a shipping notification from UPS, and Google Now gives you a card of what the status of your package is. Like, it's that preemptive giving you what you want. That's what the promise has been, is that we're going to index the world's information and serve it to you in a great way that allows you to be more productive. It's awesome.
But they said the end of search as we know it, because this isn't search anymore. This is prediction almost.
Yep.
So we've got this new voice search, but we've also got Now, which is prediction.
Yep.
I was impressed. But again, let me ask, maybe Om, you can represent the scared people. Do you worry about Google Now hearing everything you say, or the voice search hearing everything you say, hot wording?
You mean to say they don't listen to us?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, between Google and Facebook, I'm not sure whatever happens to our web is not known already. I think the board has already sailed. What we don't like is the perception of, you know, this privacy we have, that being eroded away. I think that's the reality. And, you know, I think the Google Now is a good, again, like Google Glass, it's a great first step towards that, you know, our voice interaction, our direct interaction with this, you know, this computer in the sky. And I think it's a great, it's like the first step. We have a lot more work to do before it gets, you know, really, really, really good and useful for us. I think that one of the things which I wrote about as subsequent to my visit to the keynote was that what Google is doing is defining experiences by using data. Like, and what that might mean is that they're defining how we do or we consume search by how we have used search and what we have searched for. And I think that is the right way of designing applications in the future. So they're on the right track. I'm actually pretty excited about what happens in the future from Google. I do know that they are less likely to do nefarious things compared to, you know, the other guys in the other big guys, right? Like the Facebook, I don't trust very much, mostly because they start you know, with the idea that they will, you know, mess with the privacy of the consumer, whereas Google still has, you know, some qualities left which they don't want to, you know, screw you over completely. Sorry.
I get that feeling too, but I hope that we're right.
Well, one of the things that I think the creepy factor comes a lot of times from a lack of transparency as to why something is happening. So, for example, I love Google Now on my iPhone. It's awesome. It all the time.
Yeah.
And the other day I came home on a Thursday and I got out of the car and I checked Google Now and it gave me the preview for that night's Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy is like my dirty little secret of television watching that I like Grey's Anatomy, you know? And how did it know I like Grey's Anatomy?
Damn.
Well, I've mentioned it once in a blog post. Did Google, like, pick it up from a blog post? I don't search Grey's Anatomy. How did it know that? And there was no indication where that came from. And I think people would feel more comfortable with some of the aspects of Google Now and what they're doing if there was more transparency as to the source of the information.
Well, I don't think that people get tripped up by the lack of transparency or stuff like that, because Google Now hit a home run for you. You like the TV show.
If you get value, I think you
exactly.
kind of are. It seems to me, I'm noticing, because it doesn't bother me, but I do worry
about
it.
That wasn't a home run for me. That was like being
where'd that come
the
from?
Side of the head by a wild pig.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the comparison is that what do we see from Siri? We've seen, you know, look how Siri got this wrong.
Right.
Like, that's all. We never see how Siri got it right. You know,
Siri is in big trouble with what Google's doing. I mean, Apple.
Oh, this is huge. Just like Maps.
Yeah, Apple may as well. You know, Apple either has to deliver its own home run or they have Siri problems.
I got the strongest sense at this Google I.O., as long as it was, that what we had been watching for the last few years was building a foundation. And it may be apparent unless you were really smart like Ohm, it wasn't apparent what the foundation was. But now and I actually mentioned this to Bradley Horowitz as I was leaving. Now it feels like the pieces are clicking into place, and we're starting to see the outlines of the edifice where you're tying search into Now and Google Plus into this, and everything seems to be unifying into a structure that really seems to work quite well. And it feels to me like a train slowly leaving the station, that it's going to be harder and harder for Facebook and Apple and Microsoft and Amazon to keep up, because Google's been building this up for so long. They've been building up this head of steam, and now they're starting to move, and it's going to be too late. Apple, you know, Maps is a very good example of Apple missing the boat, not understanding that Google's put 10 years into this, and you can't just march right in and do it.
And Facebook had tried to do this with its graph search, and if you've used that new search feature, it doesn't do 90% of the time what Facebook says it will do.
Right.
It's pretty much just a search for your friends. And and nobody yet, I think, has come up with any kind of search or delivery of information, because, traditional search is dead with what Google's doing. No one has come up with a delivery of information system yet that's as good as what Google has.
And I think...
Go ahead, Om.
Interrupt for 1 minute. My point in this debate is that a lot of us have overlooked what Google has been doing for a very long time, which is spending close to $500 to $800 million every 3 months on building its infrastructure, which is its data centers, its fiber networks, its own switches, its own server, you know, basically building this giant computer which can actually do all these things. There is, you can't build all that overnight. You know, Facebook now has two data centers. Apple has two data centers, but it's not the same thing. Having as much compute resources today is not going to be easy for these people to catch up with that. The reason you can get Google Now results at line speed, essentially the minute you ask a question or even it pops up on your phone, is because Google has installed these massive machines, and they are sitting in the last mile, you know, what you call the central offices, or connecting with carrier networks at such point at closest to the consumer. So which brings their results much faster. You know, behind this beautiful edifice we have of Android and iOS, there is you know, there is a very complicated piece of technology which is still underlying, which makes the whole thing work. And they have built the best underlying machine in the world. And I spending money on that is the main reason they are able to do it. And I think we cannot underscore that aspect of it. So it doesn't matter, you know, what people are missing. I think that's the this. I wrote this post like in 2008 to 2009, which basically talked about Google's infrastructure was its strategic, you know, weapon. And I remember meeting Larry and Sergey back in the day, essentially before they even launched, and they showed me their deck as to what the company's vision was. And the vision included building this giant compute network of their own, which spread worldwide. I mean, there's not very many people who think about where they're going in 15, 20 years as clearly as they did. And they, the infrastructure part of it is very crucial. And I think that's the biggest reason they're able to do Google Glass. I mean, what you're seeing on the front end, the consumer end of things, is just what they've been able to do at the infrastructure level. I think that's the hidden Google nobody really sees. And, you know, this is the same area you used to get Wall Street people, you know, complaining about why Google shouldn't be spending this much money on infrastructure and hardware and all these other things. And like, why not? Like, now you know why not.
Well, and more than building the infrastructure, they've also been collecting the data. So things like, remember Google, Goog 411, which very famously was collecting a lot of voice samples so that their voice recognition could be better. They've been collecting so much data. They've got these infrastructure so they can store it and process it. They've effectively built a giant neural network, I would guess. I mean, they're Skynet.
Well, let's not get too carried away.
No, but it's because they, it's exactly what you said, which is because they had the vision to build the network, collect the data. Now we're seeing the fruits of that process. And it's 10 years ahead of where anybody who suddenly goes, oh, we ought to do that. Well, good luck. We'll see you in 10 years.
And I think you can't. I mean, I think a fact, you know, all of Ohm's points are true, but factor in also the recent management changes by Larry Page and a focusing of what they do.
Yeah.
We've seen for years, you know, under Eric Schmidt and before that, the whole, you know, 80-20, how Google employees work on personal projects 20% of the time. That's how we got these cool things come up. Larry Page locked it down, said, no, these are what we need to do. And now we're seeing all the benefit of that. We're seeing a consistent design approach. We're seeing commonality across the applications. We're seeing shutting down. You know, we're all complaining about Google Reader shutting down, but Google Plus is going to be that much stronger, better for it. You know,
so, Ohm, do you think they planned this from day one?
Well, I do know that they knew the importance of infrastructure from day one.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't scale the search by itself. They couldn't scale the search.
Yeah. I think this is just where, look, I think you were calling it a neural network. I think it's a neural network from if this was an amoeba, right? I think we are at that early stage of understanding. And I think, like, this is why we kind of have to put everything in context. This is why I think all the media and bloggers, and we can't, you know, get too upset about a lot of things, but we also have to be very careful about the privacy, like what these companies do. Company like Google, as it becomes more powerful, we need to know what we should be, how we should be looking at them and how we should be looking to cover them and thinking about them in a contextual manner so that they don't try and steamroll how we human beings actually like to live and do certain things.
Well,
and
it's our job rapidly becomes continue to press Google to do the right thing and say, hey, we're paying attention. Yeah. We may celebrate this. We may be excited by hot wording. But we also are aware of the downside, and we're going to pay attention. We're going to keep you honest. I think that's the right job for the Fourth Estate.
You know, one of the
it's not government anymore. It's Google.
Right. Well, to that point, like one of the announcements that happened at I/O that really didn't get that much attention or play by the press has been the Google Wallet integration with Gmail. Did you see?
Yeah,
that?
You can mail money.
Yeah, just send money.
I don't know if it's the carriers. I think it is the carriers. I cannot get Wallet working on any of my phones.
Wallet, I love Wallet.
What phone do you have? Is it Nexus 4?
It's
the only one. Because it won't work on the HTC. Yeah. You know, it's blocked by the carrier on the HTC One. Yeah. It's blocked in the Galaxy S4. So you're saying, which carrier?
I'm on T-Mobile.
Now on T-Mobile, so yeah. Maybe
T-Mobile,
it's Samsung
the Nexus
that's
4,
locking
no
it.
Problem. Gina was cracking up because I drove Gina up to the brick house to do all about Android, and she was laughing because I used the Zipcar app to get a Zipcar, and then we got in the car and we drove up and we stopped at the 7-Eleven.
You don't have any money.
I used Google Wallet to get a Snapple, and yeah, it's great.
As soon as they accept Bitcoin, we can get the government out entirely.
Yeah.
Hey, this just in. This is a leaked screenshot of what some think Flickr will announce tomorrow. This is what somebody has leaked out as was in the beta, apparently. As what do you think, Trey, of a potential new look for Flickr? Very much more Pinteresty.
Yes, we just don't know where this screenshot came from. It could have come from anywhere.
Right.
Not me, by the way, Yahoo.
No, I'm showing it on my screen, though, so you can talk about it.
So it looks to me like a total redesign.
Yeah.
Even though Flickr did have a restart,
you still
recently,
see you contacts, groups, and explore at the top.
Yeah,
that hasn't changed.
But now I think they're feeling the pressure from 500px and Google Plus and places where the photos get bigger and all the other information gets out of the way.
Yeah.
So here the picture looks huge.
Yep.
It looks like there's a focus on the stream and your community. It looks better. You know, I would say it's not groundbreaking, but I would say it's an iterative step in the right direction.
I want to ask you about Google Plus. There was a redesign there. There's a new Maps. There's a lot to talk about still.
Yeah.
And then we really do have to talk about Larry Page. He took the stage. He said some very provocative things. And I'd like to know what you all think about that. So we will do that in a little bit. You're watching This Week in Tech. And that was a great week for tech, I'll tell you. With Om Malik, Trey Ratcliffe, Ron Richards, and Dwight Silverman. I'm glad we got a big panel because there's a lot to talk about. Our show today brought to you by a company that I'm kind of excited about. This is a new idea. And Trey, I bet you worked at Accenture. You were a management consultant, right?
Yes.
Is that what you did, kind of?
I did more technology implementation, programming, and technical architecture.
You were like the nerd in House of Lies. You were like the Harvard guy, right? You ever see
that
show?
That reference. No.
Oh man, it's a show about management consultants with Don Cheadle. It's awesome.
I like Don Cheadle.
Awesome.
I like that sentence. Yeah. It's a show about management consultants. It's awesome.
It's the funniest show you've ever seen.
Yeah. All right.
It's the funniest show you've ever seen, and it's all about how they come in. Anyway, it's all about the spreadsheets, the charts, and one of the things I've learned that nowadays big business has access to something called BI, business intelligence, that is transforming business because they've got all the data, but they never knew what to do with it. They were always reacting, never planning, never preparing. And now a big company's got business intelligence is really changing the world. This is a company, SumAll, that wants to make this kind of connected insight available to everybody, to you, to me, to everybody, for free right now. I'm not sure what their model is. Dane Atkinson, who was one of the founders of Squarespace, has been a friend of this network for a long time and is a great guy, started this. It's called SumAll, S-U-M-A-L-L. Now, they do have a price on the page, but they're not going to charge you because the idea is, I don't even know how to describe this. Let's go back to the home and see if we can.
It looks beautiful.
What it is it's going to take analytics. You need this, Trey. It takes analytics from all of the places you do stuff, your website, from PayPal, from Amazon, everywhere, and puts that data together in a way, like business intelligence, that you can then act upon it and see what works for you. See if those retweets stimulated a flow to your Pinterest page, that kind of thing. They've made deals, and they're making more deals all the time with many of the big social networks. This is an amazing idea. It's kind of like, some of the nerds I know love pivot tables, the idea. Right.
I had such a pivot table moment at work
the
other day.
You're such a
nerd.
Oh, my God.
When you get the data in the right place,
this
and
is
it gives
pivot
you the
tables, and you don't have to know what the hell you're doing.
It's wonderful.
This will take the data and remix it in new ways that gives you insights into what you're doing. You can be a data scientist without studying data science. You can get their SumAll email every day so that you understand what's going on. And this is all free to you right now. I want you to try it out. SumAll.com. If you sell online, if you're just building brand, if you're building attention, when I start my new vlog, I think I'll be
Leo Poops.
Yeah, that one. I think I'll be I'll be using this to track hits. You connect YouTube up to Instagram, up to Twitter, up to Facebook, up to Bing, up to Google, up to Amazon, up to PayPal, up to eBay. Suddenly, you start getting some insights.
Looks cool.
It's kind of amazing. So try it free. SumAll.com. You see. I don't know how to describe this, except that if you know what BI is, if you're used to that notion, it's transformed the way businesses operate in the 21st century.
When I was at Revision 3 and when we would tweet out an episode, a link. Wouldn't know if it had any impact or effect.
We're using it now for exactly that reason. We want to know what social campaigns make, what difference.
Time of day.
And not just to downloads, but to T-shirt sales and to, you know, I mean, all of it's tied together. It's very interesting.
We do it all manually right now. Curtis has to go in and look at store sales tutorials and look at how all this stuff is.
Curtis, try this. Where is Curtis? Sumall.com. Okay. Yeah. Have you heard of it?
Yes.
Oh, well, use it. I don't want to put you out of business, but I think this could be very useful. It's free. Okay. All right?
The price is right.
You know what? Would you report back to me, Trey, someday? And let me know. Just send me an email saying what you thought about it. Dane Atkinson, if you want to get connected. I know you know the Squarespace guys.
I don't know the Squarespace guys.
You should know those guys.
Dane's a good dude.
Well, Dane's not there anymore. He went and started this. He took some of his money and said, I think I want to do something different. Mm-hmm. Sales, sites, visits, fans, and followers. Mm. One secure, convenient place. Compare data across different platforms. Deep insights, probably the word I should use. Oh, yeah, deep insight. Google Analytics, Authorize.net, Google AdWords, Shopify, Bing, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Amazon, PayPal. It's kind of amazing. And they're making deals with services all the time, so that list gets longer all the time. Sumall.com. It's free. I asked him, what's your business model? He says, I don't know yet. Seriously.
Figure out later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, well, maybe it'll be freemium, but maybe not.
I think that's a smart way to do it. Just build something awesome and then figure it out later.
That's his attitude. Yeah. He says, I just want to make something awesome. Yeah. And you know, the truth is he doesn't need the money. He's just doing it. He just needs it.
That must be nice.
Yeah, I know.
I wish I had that problem.
He doesn't need the money. He just is going to build something awesome and then see what happens.
That's our model for Stuck on Earth. We have no business model. Just build it. It's a beautiful app. It's awesome. I don't know what's going to happen.
You're the most zen guy ever. Stuck on Earth, it's on iPad. Is there an iPhone version or just iPad?
No, just iPad, and we just released for Android. Totally free. Yes. No ads. You have it?
No, I don't have it, but I'm going to download it.
Oh, man, it is.
There's a Leo Easter egg on that.
Oh, is there? Yeah. I'm going to do it right now.
Actually, there's a Ron Easter egg, too, right? Everybody has an Easter egg.
Yeah, there's a lot of names on there. You will love it, brother. It's good.
Trey also has, God, you have 100 cameras in one. What else do you have? You got a million.
We got all kinds of stuff.
He's got a lot of app.
We just opened a new store on the website, too, where we sell like video tutorials.
Stuckincustoms.com.
Yeah, Lightroom presets.
I use your Lightroom presets. They're really awesome.
Thank you.
Those aren't free?
Those aren't free. But we've got
Did you give them to me or did I pay for them? I don't even remember. You must have given them to me.
I don't remember either.
They're awesome.
Thank you. No, they sell one day. Like, I think over a 3-day period, we sold like 1,800 of them.
Well,
it's crazy.
Lightroom, this is one of the best things about Lightroom is you can, with a preset, do a lot.
Yeah.
And
Lightroom,
if you want your pictures to look like Trey's, I got a button that says Treyify.
Yeah.
And it just does it. I don't post
those
pictures.
How do you do that?
You need this, Ohm.
I'll send you some.
I know. It's
free
like
presets,
Ohm.
You will love these presets.
Oh,
they really
so good.
Will.
Do you use Lightroom, Ohm?
Well, I'll buy it now.
Oh, it's worth it.
Yeah,
it's in the App Store. It's easy. Yeah. Lightroom 5, what do you think? Have you played with it at all?
I'm not as thrilled by it as some people are. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Adobe shills out there that just praise everything Adobe does. I'm very cynical. I feel like Ohm, actually. I'm a super optimistic, zen guy. I see Ohm as sort of like this cynical curmudgeon. But that's what I feel like with Adobe.
What about this move that you can't buy the software anymore?
I can't
believe
you just ditched me like that.
No, that's good.
No, it's good.
It means you have taste.
You know, you're great.
Like you talked like him like he wasn't sitting next to you.
Wait, he's a guest on the show. No, Ohm, you're great. Because actually, you know, you're cynical. You got to be cynical in this industry. So that's kind of your thing.
A cynical optimist. That's how I like to describe
it. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. We love technology and we recognize the issues. This is what I was getting back to, but it's our job to keep them honest because they, you know, so. How about this Adobe move to the Creative Cloud? Everything's subscription now.
I think it's not a good move. It's angering so many
photographers.
It really
is. Pissing people off.
The thing they don't understand is that Adobe has, for Photoshop, there's two distinct crowds. There's like the pros and the studios and people like me. I don't mind paying $30
a month like
that's worth it.
Right.
But there's a lot of hobbyists and students and people that just can't afford. What is that? $360 a year?
It's too big an investment for me. I don't want to spend that money every month.
Yeah, I think it's not a good move. And then they have a totally different business model with Adobe Lightroom. You know what? Which is also a good one for hobbyists and pros.
But you need Photoshop. You use Photoshop and Lightroom.
Like, I use both.
It's part of your workflow. You
and
go
a lot
Lightroom.
Of people get both. And you have to engage with Adobe with two different business models.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I think they're in trouble. And also, speaking of Adobe, I think they're in trouble with this move from Google and the way that they're going to start organizing your photos for you.
Oh,
so
let's
you don't
talk
have
about
to get Lightroom.
Yeah. I, you know, that's another one where I went, there's so many technology. You see, so many technology things that are a solution in search of a problem. But everybody has this problem. You take too many pictures and you don't know, and you never get around to sorting them, and now you just got a blob.
Yeah.
And this, and it looked like it did a pretty credible job.
It does a really nice job. And
so we should explain what it does. You have, if you use Google Plus, you have on or an Android phone, you have automatic uploads of all your images to your Google Plus privately.
Right.
And now the new thing is I guess Google's kind of phasing out Picasa Web a little bit.
Yeah, thank God.
And moving that stuff into Google Plus in terms of sharing, but also in terms of tools, they're all on the web. And one of the things it does, you have to check the box to say do this, is it will go through all your photos and pick the best ones.
Yeah.
It's and it automatic. Did it with mine, and I looked at it and said, oh, yeah, those are the best.
Okay,
no idea.
It's got a smart algorithm. It takes out all your – it doesn't delete your blurry photos.
No, they're all still
there.
Duplicates.
It looks at people in your circles who you have affinity towards. Mm-hmm. If they're smiling, like your family are smiling, it's going to promote those up to the front. It looks at basically like human aesthetics. You know, what kind of things do people like to see in landscapey photos? Mm-hmm. Those move to the front. But this is a huge problem. People take so many photos and they never get a chance to organize them. And hitherto, their only solution, which I recommend even to casual and hobbyist photographers, is you got to get Adobe Lightroom.
Right. Okay?
But now, and that's Adobe's biggest growth area too, is hobbyist and advanced amateurs who want to buy their products. Pretty much every pro already has Lightroom. There's no growth there for Adobe. But it's all these people that have entry-level DSLRs or compact cameras or cell phones, and their photos are just an organizational mess. But I say, let the cloud do it for you. Even me as a pro, right? So
look how it did this. Okay. So these are things in my photo stream that are just automatically uploaded. It's made bigger the better pictures. It knows I like bacon,
for instance. And that's a good shot of bacon.
That's a hell of a shot.
Yeah.
Somehow, Google Plus made the bacon bigger, and it made some of the bad pictures smaller. Then it has another button. I'm not going to scroll down too far because I don't know what else other stuff's down here. But it has a button that says see the rest.
Right.
Right?
They're all there.
Now, do you think it does a good job of this? Have you tried it on your photos?
It does a very good job. Yeah, it's very smart.
How do it know?
Well, it's just got a nice algorithm, and I think it will get better over time. It's almost like having an assistant make a first pass.
Yes.
And if it makes a mistake, you can just go correct it. It will learn over time. Let it do it for you. It's incredibly clever, and it's just going to get smarter. And it's free.
So they named it Auto Awesome.
Yes, Auto Awesome is another effect.
Yep.
That's you press a button.
Right.
And it enhances, right?
No.
Awesomizes your photos.
Yes. Like if you take a bunch of photos in a row, it'll make animated GIFs for you.
That's kind of cool, too. I like this feature on the HTC One called the Zoe, where it takes a video but then takes 20 shots out of that three-second video. And you get animated. You have nice animated pictures, which you can later use.
Yep.
So this is, in effect, kind of a reverse Zoe. It's making GIFs. If I take 20 or 5 pictures really quickly, it'll make an animated GIF out.
Sort of a fun thing.
It's great. Right. I wish it had done that with the bacon.
But I mean,
so
this
Trey, is it good enough for? I mean, you're a professional photographer. It's how you make your money. Is this good enough for you to walk away from Lightroom? I mean, you praise it pretty highly. Would you use this?
No, I'm a pro, and I have the same problem as everybody. Okay, so my professional photos, my epic landscape shots, or whatever. I will always, at least for the foreseeable future, use Lightroom and Photomatics and Photoshop on my client system to do those.
Always.
At least for the next few years until the cloud gets super fast, right? Or if we get a Chrome app, like let's say Nick makes a successor to Photoshop and it's all on the client side in a Chrome app, I could do a lot in there. But other than that, I'm just a regular guy that takes a ton of family photos, a ton of snapshots as I'm walking on the streets. I don't have time to put that through my same Lightroom workflow. So for all my regular life shots, of which there's a ton, just like everybody else, I'll let Google handle that. I'll just upload it to the cloud, and that'll save me hours and hours and hours of time that I can now focus on my pro shots.
Well, look, this is an example. I have there were 5 or 6 shots taken of this group, and it picked the ones with the best smiles. That's amazing. Awesome. Everybody's smiling in it. They're all happy. I wish it had picked the ones with the best hats. But I just think that kind of smarts. If it's better than your average artificial intelligence. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And it is a problem everybody has. I'm looking at some of your, because you're a pro, you do a lot of burst mode photography. So a number of your photos are automatically automated GIFs. I don't do enough burst mode, I guess. I'll do some more.
Yeah, it's fun.
All right, what about the new Google Plus? Let's talk about that. Some people thought very controversial. It's two or three columns, depending on how wide your screen is. I should point out, if you go to the more in the menu at the very bottom, they kind of hide it. There is a revert to single column. So you're not stuck with this.
Yeah, you can choose between the two different modes. But when you've got a widescreen monitor like most of us do now, that single column looks awful empty.
Yeah.
When you do it. Like
I was complaining about the Google Plus layout when they went to the new layout.
Yep.
Not the previous new layout because of all this wasted space.
Yep.
And so for me, this is a very Pinteresty look. Isn't that where the influence
that tiled,
is?
That
Mr. Tiled Pinterest, the one guy I know who uses Pinterest.
I get in touch with my feminine side there.
It's also like the new Facebook timeline.
It is very much like Facebook, yeah.
Right, right. And I think that's really there.
It's what it is really is a magazine layout. It's not Pinterest didn't invent it. This is a magazine layout.
Is it like Flipboard?
Yeah, I think this is very different. I think the company is taking a different direction. This is not like Facebook. I think Facebook is still very centered around people and what people do on their service. And this one is Google doing what Google does best, is machines crunching data and showing information based on how people have shared and, you know, how the interactions are between people and the data. It's a data-driven design, and it's pretty interesting because I think in the future, many of the apps are going to be built using this kind of ideology. And the reason they are able to do it, because they have the resources to process massive amounts of data to define a design which is based on these, you know, data correlations. I think this is going to be a very interesting first move from Google. I really do feel that this is a positive direction from them on a design perspective for Google Plus. The biggest challenge they have is how to get more people to use it, which will always remain a problem. I see no reason why I need to use Google Plus as a central location. I'm happy to use Google Plus applications like, you know, the Awesome and the Highlights and all those things are kind of nice and cool. And if they were standalone apps, they would actually be more useful than this idea of this one unified place where we all go to and see what is happening. So I actually wrote about this, and I definitely feel that they've taken a different direction. And I think Gundotra said this, Vic Gundotra said this, and he said that we've put Google in Google Plus. What essentially that means is they put the power of the machine in Google Plus.
Exactly. And, like automatically figuring out hashtags when you make a post.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's exactly what it is. And I think they need to kind of just forget about the stream and just go make it easier for people to, you know, do what they do, which is like use photo applications and find information on Google and, you know, like become more natural, you know, usage behavior on Google is finding information, consuming information. That's what they should be doing. Social is not a natural behavior on Google. And I think that's exactly what they're realizing.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, that's kind of you articulated it much better than I did, but that's the feeling I got. I didn't feel like this is a community particularly, but I have to say I love, and in the new Google Plus especially, love scanning it.
Mm.
There's always something interesting in it now. And it's not because I put together such great circles, because most of the people I know are not on Google Plus.
Well, the three columns is nice. You know, I do think we can read more data than we could last year, and we could read more data.
But look at this. So here's a post that mentions Ronald Reagan. So automatically it's hashtagged with Ronald Reagan. And then I'm going to get other related searches, and I can scroll through Ronald Reagan posts, related hashtags. This really makes you want to browse, which is what Pinterest does so well, right?
I think the big difference is that the interaction, to me at least, the user interaction is so much more improved. And right now, both on the mobile app side and the desktop on the website, so much better than Facebook. And when comparing social networks, we're talking a lot about Facebook's woes on, at least on the Android side with their application and how, you know, Facebook Home is a step in the right direction and things like that. But, I mean, Om, you're absolutely right. It's the power of a platform like this is as good as who uses it.
And even, but I have to say, because of the better design, I notice I'm commenting more, I'm plus one more, I am engaging more.
Right.
So a good design can drive more engagement.
Right, but you're not necessarily engaging with the people you want to be engaging
with. No, strangers.
They're across the street or something like that. Yeah. So I wonder if the problem with Google Plus, if they can get over it, is the timing. Is that, you know, Facebook being so early to the game and getting so many users. I know the vast majority of my personal network is all on Facebook. And despite my praising Android and praising Google and trying to get them to come over, they're not going to come over.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Trey, you get most of your interaction on Facebook, I would imagine, as opposed to Google Plus. Or maybe not.
No. I definitely get more on Google Plus.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Facebook is definitely a close second, though.
Right.
The number of followers is different in both, but... the number of photo views I get on Google Plus is off the charts. Now, with the new redesign, they just hid photo views. But, you know, if I have X million followers, it doesn't mean I get that exactly that many photo views. But I get a lot more than I do comments and plus ones.
Right.
It's in the hundreds of thousands of photo views, whereas, you know, maybe just a few hundred plus ones.
All right, let's talk about Larry Page. First of all, we hadn't seen Larry in ages because he's had a vocal cord paralysis, something that happened to him first when he was a kid after a cold happened to him again, I guess, a couple of years ago. Wasn't able to talk. Took the stage. Voice was weak, but it was a Steve Jobs moment when he walks out on the stage and he's kind of sounding weak. Even though these are not life-threatening illnesses for him, it does kind of resonate a little bit. You've got the CEO up on the stage and he's sounding kind of weak, but he's also articulating a vision. Which was very much a Jobsian vision, a global vision. Now, I have to say my cynic meter kicked in kind of big time when he said, well, we just want no more negativity, and can't we all just get along, and we just want to make new products. He said it's not a zero-sum game. I agree with the vision he articulated. I question whether Google lives up to that vision.
Well, this concept of not. You know, not a zero-sum game, this is...
I love that.
This is right on.
That's right on.
I do believe they believe that. And if there's not a finite amount of stuff out there or of wealth or of any of this stuff, you know, if that's their vision and they're not trying
I have to agree with what John Gruber wrote on Daring Fireball, which is, you just want to create new stuff, except that Android's a copy of iPhone and Google Plus is a copy of Facebook. I mean, you can go down the list. There, you know, Gmail was just another webmail app. Admittedly, they did it better. But it's not like they're making up new stuff out of whole cloth.
Well, he's got something on his face that argues that.
Well, yeah, but they didn't mention glass at the keynote.
True,
no,
but
you don't have to.
In fact, Larry said something I thought was kind of interesting. Somebody asked him, so how many of these are you going to make? And he said, I don't know. Ask Sergey. Sergey's bits. Adams, I'm bits. It was like he said, nah, I don't. In fact, there was very little hardware. In fact, zero hardware talked about. They mentioned the fact they're going to do a Galaxy S4 pure phone, and that's it.
Which is huge. But
huge. Yeah. If you've got $650 bucks exactly. Lying around, it's huge. Yeah. I just spent a lot more for this one with Samsung crap all over it. But I just feel like we can't give him a free pass. He articulated a great vision, but it was a vision of a Google that's an idealized vision. Yes? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he's blue sky and he's very zen.
That's his job as the CEO.
He sees a glorious kind of utopian Star Trekian future, right? And I think
where
that's
there are no regulators.
Well, I think that's something that we all do aspire to. And I think there's something to have good intentions, but there's something else to have good execution. And I feel like Google may have both of those. Like this
right.
is what. This is what Om said earlier.
They're aiming at it.
There's many companies going down this direction. You're like, well, who do you, you know, which horse do you bet on?
Matt Honan wrote a great piece on Wired. Welcome to Google Island. Because Larry basically said, we want somewhere where we don't have to worry about regulators and competition, where you just do whatever we say.
Well, I mean, it goes back to, you know, kind of we make our own realities and, you know, kind of goes back to the Mad Men axiom, which is you don't like what people are saying about you, change the conversation.
What do you think, Om? You're the cynic.
I think I'm with you on this one, Leo. I hate to do this, but I have to agree with you, but I will.
just once. Come on.
You know, listening to Larry, and then to hearing Ohm's description of him showing this grand vision early on, it makes me want to go back and listen to Larry again, right, knowing now what I heard from Ohm, that this is something they've always had in mind, and they're now able to execute on it because they have the infrastructure to do it. That's a really interesting concept, and it kind of changes my impression, hearing Ohm, of what Larry said.
So, Ohm, do you think that Larry is naive, or do you think that he's cynically, you know, misrepresenting Google's intentions, or do you think this is an aspirational speech, that he understands that it's not happening, but he wants to live up to this?
I think it's, you know, all people at Larry's position live in their own sense of reality, and I think in his reality, he thinks everybody else is wrong, and they're doing the right thing, and they're doing leading the charge for the right reasons. And, you know, but like the reality is a little bit more nuanced than how Larry sees it. But I'm not, like, I wrote about this. I pointed out a disconnect between what he said is like, let's all get together and, you know, work together. And then he goes like 5 minutes later, he basically
shuts down,
crashes Microsoft, right, and Oracle in the same, like it's not even like 15 minutes and he does that. And it's like, okay, I'm not very clear how that really, you know, amplifies this message of, you know, working together and that whole kumbaya feeling, you know, we're supposed to have. And I think there is a huge, huge problem right now. And I'm not so sure I'm not so sure, like, you know, how I would think about this any differently. I think he needs, like, Google and Larry need to, if they want to be the leaders and statesmen of the industry, they just need to be a little bit, you know, clear and put their actions, have to speak more for them than just the words. And I think that is where we need to go. And, you know, this is a company which is also trying to do some, you know, interesting things. For instance, it's shutting down a lot of the, you know, support for all open standards, right? Like Google Plus has no open RSS output. There's, you know, Google Reader is gone, and with it, RSS future is a little bit at at risk. Now on the Google Calendar, they have dropped the support for CalDAV, and instead they're going for their own proprietary API. They're dropping support for XMPP. You know, like, if you start looking at all these things, you suddenly see that, you know, the words and the actions don't really catch up. It's sort of like I kind of feel that is something which always unsettles me about Google.
I think you're right, though. The CEOs live in their own bubble, and he probably feels like, no, we're doing this. We're doing all this. I thought it was very interesting. Mary Jane Foley, who writes about Microsoft for ZDNet and is the host of our Windows Weekly, said Microsoft set a trap for Google, which I thought was quite interesting. She was pretty clear in her mind that Microsoft knew exactly what Google would do and how bad it would look for Google to do it. And Microsoft very cleverly set up a trap with this YouTube application. I mean, that, for instance, now it's one thing to say, well, there's no API, which is what they said. And so we had to write an app because we have to have a YouTube app for Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. We're just doing what m.youtube.com, the mobile site, does. But there's one little thing they didn't mention, which is they also allow downloads of videos in high quality, which YouTube has never allowed in any context. And I think it's her opinion, and Peter Bright, who was also on the show, I think he agreed from Ars Technica, that Microsoft knew exactly what it was doing, knew that Google would have to shut it down for various legal reasons, and that they would have to do it right about Google I.O. time. I don't think that they knew it would be timed so closely to Larry's speech, but Clever.
But Google, Microsoft, I mean, Google didn't complain about the downloads, did they? They just complained about the advertising?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the complaint?
Yeah. But what's interesting is that the ads are not on m.youtube.com, which is where they have to scrape their feed from. They're taking the RSS feeds. So I think it's very interesting. Who knows? I think that there, I think it's more nuanced than we might know. And I think it's very intriguing that Microsoft, who is really has been after Google with a Scroogle campaign, might have perhaps known exactly how it was going to play out and how bad it would look.
I always wonder when those kind of things happen, when those kind of conspiracy things happen, because I guess I don't believe people are clever enough to come up with
it's
that.
It's just chess, baby. You just look two moves ahead and the other guy's looking one moves ahead. You got him.
Yeah.
It's just chess. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. A couple more stories to throw in before we throw down. I got to mention Jerry Ellsworth. We found out what she's been up to since Valve fired her. Maybe Valve made a little bit of a mistake. But first, a word about postage. If you mail a lot in your business, you need to know about stamps.com. This is not for your Christmas card list. This is for somebody who mails out invoices and flyers, somebody who mails packages. Maybe you're an Etsy maker and you want to sell on Etsy.com. Maybe you sell on eBay and you do fulfillment. This is the best way to do it with stamps.com. You print your own postage for any class of mail directly from your computer and your printer. You can print onto envelopes. You can print a label, mailing label. Their USB scales means you never have too little or too much postage on a package. It's always just right. They'll help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. There's no guesswork at all. And you can get it whenever you need it. You don't have to go to the post office. It's 24/7 hot and cold running U.S. postage right from the desk. They even fill out the international forms, the mailing labels, and everything taken directly from the site you use, whether it's QuickBooks or PayPal or Etsy or Amazon. Stamps.com, we've been using it for years. I've been using it personally for years, and we use it here in the office, and we love it. And I cannot recommend it more highly. That's why I wanted you to try it. So we've arranged a special deal. Chad showed you the website. If you go to stamps.com, that looks pretty good with that $80 bonus value, but I don't want you to do that. I want you, before you do anything else, to click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter in our offer code TWIT. That'll take that $80 no-risk trial and bump it up with $55 in free postage to $110 value. You get the digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling. I think it's a few bucks. $5 supply kit and a four-week trial of Stamps.com. You can cancel at any time, but that scale is yours to keep forever. I think you're going to like it. Get started today with Stamps.com. It really makes you look pro. They'll even send out emails with the confirmation number and stuff. I mean, you've seen it before. Probably a lot of the people you do business with use Stamps.com. You'd be surprised how many do. Stamps.com. Try it today. Click the microphone. Use the offer code TWIT for a $110 bonus offer. We're talking about the news of the week. Jerry Ellsworth, who we know well. We love Jerry. She is a maker. She was working at Steam. We didn't know what she was working on, but we knew she was a hardware person. So we thought, what could she be doing for Valve in the great Valve massacre of a couple of months ago when they fired 25 employees, the great cleansing? Jerry left, and she took with her these glasses. Well, she was showing these glasses at Maker Faire this weekend.
I heard, yeah.
And it sounds very cool. You think your Google Glass is cool. These are augmented reality glasses. Jerry Ellsworth and programmer Rick Johnson, she's hardware, he's software. They've been working on it for over a year at Valve. And apparently when they were laid off, they weren't. They said, go ahead, take it. We don't want it. From the reports of people who have worn them, and there's an article by Sean Hollister in The Verge, this is pretty amazing. It's not Google Glass or Oculus Rift. It projects a miniature virtual reality, like that gaming environment that we were watching with the Xbox, except you're in it. You can see and interact with it in three dimensions into the world in augmented reality. And so it's a little rough looking in the prototype.
I think that's kind.
But I know Jerry, yeah, and she is a hardware wizard. A hardware wizard, and if she's figured out a way to make these, she also likes her glue gun, I admit, a little more than some. But those who tried it at the Maker Faire this weekend said it was mind-boggling. The active shutter glasses filter out images for each of your left and right eyes 120 times a second, so all the images are in 3D. It's a retro-reflective projector screen which bounces the images into your face. You have miniature projectors attached. Here's the picture from there. She is. I love Jerry. She is brilliant, untrained, brilliant engineer who can do anything. Here, if you Chad, I have the video from The Verge on here, and so you feel like you're in the space. Now, this is, you know, as with glass, you can't really see what it's like to be in there or the Oculus Rift, but there's all sorts of wands and things to play with. It's very low latency, and they think they'll be able to make it very cheap. I like this. I'm excited. And I'm thrilled to hear that Jerry got to keep the intellectual property.
I think that, I mean, reading this article and reading some of the other articles about it, to hear the passion and the dedication. I mean, I think the quote in this is what I was going to build come hell or high water. Like,
yeah.
This is like they were onto something, know they're onto something, and just because Valve didn't agree with them isn't going to stop them.
I don't know if Gabe Newell said, okay, take it with you, or if they sued or what, but I'm glad they got it.
Yeah, no, it says Valve has released any ownership or interest in the project, and they're free to develop it as they
Gabe.
Want. You know, so, I mean.
So Valve is supposedly working on a console, right? Why wouldn't they want this for their console?
Well, we thought that that's what Jerry was working on because we knew she was a hardware hacker. She's brilliant.
Right.
And we couldn't imagine that she was working on anything but something, not a Steam box, but something cooler.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was this, but you'd think they'd want it. But, you know, remember, Valve is not a hardware company. It might have been, they might have felt they were biting off more than they could chew. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, according to her, it says, you know, Gabe was completely behind it. I talked to Gabe. He talked to lawyers, and it's like, it's theirs. Make it happen because he could see we were passionate about it.
Good.
That's a nice story to hear.
Good.
That's true.
I mean, imagine running around in a maze. It looks like a maze, except it's not. It's a field and shooting at people. They had The Verge, Sean talked about playing a virtual Jenga game with a sword,
that's
knocking
cool.
giant blocks out of a tower. Good for them. I'm glad they got it. I think that's really fantastic. Let's see. I'm just checking through those stories, the dregs, you know, the bottom of the barrel, what's left. Nintendo kicks the Let's Play videos off YouTube, then lets them back and puts ads on them. We talked about it in our This Week in YouTube show. Chad, you were pretty upset about that.
Yeah.
These are videos where people are playing a game, and they shoot video of them playing a game, kind of like Twitch.tv.
Yep.
Nintendo has taken half the revenue, saying, well...
It's so
stupid.
It's great marketing for Nintendo.
It's such a no-brainer.
What's wrong? Lawyers ruin the world.
That's probably what Larry Page was trying to say, but didn't want to say in so many words. Mm. There's no lawyers on that island, on Google Island.
Is this where the Leroy Jenkins video came from? Is
that? That was a great. Oh, that was Warcraft. That was awesome.
That was what?
But same idea. Right?
I love that.
Idea. 7 years ago. Yeah.
And then, but Machinima, Red versus Blue, all of that stuff is kind of the same idea.
Yeah, my son is 12. He loves watching these YouTube videos where
Minecraft
people are playing.
Minecraft videos.
Minecraft videos where people talking over them, and it's the best thing for Minecraft ever. Yeah. I mean, Minecraft. Those guys would never take down those YouTube videos.
They have actually officially said that they won't take down those videos. YouTube came to them asking, would you like half of the revenue from anyone who makes a Let's Play?
Oh, that's interesting.
And they said, no, we would not like that money.
Good for Notch.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see that they say no, and then Nintendo's like, yes, we would.
And Nintendo will take any money they can get at this point.
Well, Nintendo needs the money.
It's like, they're looking at their pivot table of Wii U sales, and they're going, well, hey, you know, we got to take
maybe
we
better.
Can get, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't look like Yahoo's going to offer us $1.5 billion, so let's take the money. Microsoft Blue is going to be free. Windows Blue, which is actually going to be Windows 8.1, Microsoft now says will be a free upgrade later this year. And a good thing for those of us who've been suffering with Windows 8. We don't know exactly what will be in Blue, but I think a lot of it will be addressing the complaints people have had about the Windows 8 user interface, putting a start button on. It's not a start menu, but it's a start. Putting the boot to desktop option back in. We shall see. But the good news is it was going to be treated as a big upgrade.
You know, HP has started including on its desktop and maybe on its notebook computers something called HP Quick Start. And it brings back on the Windows 8 desktop the start menu. It looks exactly like the start menu. You can drag and drop the applications you want to use regularly into it. It works pretty much the same way. And, you know, they're replacing it even though it's not... It's not officially from Microsoft.
And look what Dell's quarterly results were. They were way, way down. The PC industry is suffering. A lot of them like to say, it moved to tablet. But I got to think Windows 8 and its lack of support is really hurting it. I got to think that. I'm the only one using a Windows device.
Yeah, I haven't touched a Windows device in years. I feel bad because I used to be a PC guy. I was totally a Windows guy. Yeah. I was totally on board and I liked it. And then I switched to Mac and I never looked back.
So. Me too. I used to think Mac people were just annoying and awful.
Me too.
But why? Okay, here's a question. Yeah. This is a little bit, meta. Why you and I were hardcore PC guys? I have a feeling you built your own PCs.
Oh,
you could
game.
You'd put in your 3DFX cards. You get your
3DFS,
you get your FPS up as high as you could in Quake.
Yeah, overclocked on Celeron. Yep. Yeah,
okay, all so that stuff. All
we
that.
made the jump to Mac. We're happy. Mm. Why haven't these other people? Why are there so many bitter PC people?
Business.
Well, I think,
I'll tell you why. Look at my Lisa over here is doing all her spreadsheets on Excel. She's not going to use Excel on a Mac.
I do.
She's using QuickBooks.
I've moved my business stuff. I think for me, what's changed.
Actually, she's sitting in front of an iPad, and she just bought a MacBook Air. But other than that, if you look down business aisle here, it's all Dells. It's all. Oh God!
Yeah.
Well, I think business has. I think that's that was the case 5 years ago. But I think business has crossed over. For me, it's been my uses have been I've been gaming less. So the need for the 3DFX cards, stuff like that, and that gaming has moved to consoles or to tablets or phones. And I've been doing a lot more media production. I've been doing a lot more video editing, audio editing. Which
this
is
may
superior.
Have been. Yeah. This may be where it flips. Yeah. You know, Windows 8 really is for a lot. Now, every time I say this, I get a lot of email people. I don't know what you're talking about. I love Windows 8. I understand it. It works great for me. Mm-hmm. But I think that certainly a lot of you love it, but there's plenty of people who are not having a good time, and they want Windows 7.
So, Lee, I've been using Windows 8 on a desktop HP NV23, which is really nice. And the more I use Windows 8, I also have it on a home-built box. And the more I use it, the more I like it, mainly because I've got the right tools for it. So, for example, there's a Logitech touchpad that's designed for Windows 8.
You definitely need touch.
Right. Yeah. And I think if you're even on a notebook computer where it's a small screen and you're kind of, reaching up and trying to do something on a little screen, but on a big desktop, it's very cool to use. And if you think differently about Windows 8, it isn't so bad, but people have a hard time thinking differently when for years and years and years they've got a start button and the start menu. It requires a different way of thinking.
Well, part of it is that you just want to be productive. You just want it to work. You want to sit down in front of it and know what to do. And if you change the paradigm really dramatically, you take away that thing that people have clutched onto, a start button. Right. That affects the way they do work, and then it affects their opinion.
Right. Yeah, I broke down and got the Dell that runs Linux. The Dell XPS Ultrabook.
So I should say that I'm also a Mac user. I started my column in the 90s as a Windows columnist, and we had a separate Mac columnist. Bob Levitis was a Mac columnist.
And I have
kind of moved over about the mid-2000s, and I'm now running almost full-time on a Mac, and when I'm on Windows, it's at work or it's on these secondary machines. But what's funny is people just think you're a traitor when you've made that shift. Yeah. And I don't understand the anger that's still there. It's very 90s to me.
I have to say one thing. The Lumia 928 came out on Verizon, and I got a unit this week. And actually, Windows Phone is probably the best version of Windows. The best way to run it, not on a tablet, not on a laptop, not on a desktop, but on a phone, it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's really beautiful, and it works, and it's effective, and it's smooth. So it's a good phone. I'm not going to switch to it.
It's a great piece of hardware. I mean,
it's a beautiful piece.
I don't know if I agree with the OS, but the hardware itself is
it's
nice.
It's cleaner than, I'm an Android user, and it's just cleaner than Android. Android is kind of a hodgepodge. Each Android phone has its own unique, bizarre interface and so forth. So the unity that Microsoft's been able to enforce with its manufacturers, Windows Phone is Windows Phone, no matter who you buy, I think helps a lot. Well, we're going to let you all go. Oh, Malik, so great to have you. GigaOhm.com, everybody must read. And if you're a pro, go to pro.gigaohm.com and subscribe to Ohm Research. Ohm, sweet Ohm.
Thank you, Leo.
So nice to see you. We really appreciate your being here. We've been trying to get Ohm on the show for how long, Chad? 6 months? He's resisted every. I've sent him flowers.
He's been very accommodating.
We're glad
you can. Bacon.
You travel a lot, and bacon. You want? You can't eat bacon. I'm not going to let you eat bacon.
That's why you need to send me things which I can use.
Ah, no more bacon for Ohm. Make a note of that. Thank you, Ohm. Great to have you, Trey Radcliffe. We just love you too.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you. What's up for you? You got the new Android version of Stuck on Earth. That's awesome.
Yeah, we just released that. We've got, you know, every day we put up a new photo on the website.
Facebook, Google Plus, and StuckInCustoms.com.
Yeah, all those things. We put up new videos all the time. We've got a ton of free resources. And one thing we did just release, which people are excited about, is we had a big event in New Zealand, and a lot of people came out. We did a big photography workshop.
Was it in Queenstown?
It was in Queenstown and all around the South Island. And so, but
did you do a workshop in Queenstown and you didn't invite me?
I did.
Oh man, I got to check my email one of these days. Because that would be fun.
Yeah, no, it was a great time. We had 20 people come down. And while they were down there, we had a video crew with us. So they recorded everything.
Oh, neat.
And so it's a nice 4 or 5 hour landscape tutorial that we just released.
So I can see it. So that's in the website.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it could be any place. But it might give you some ideas of coming to New Zealand, because it's a beautiful place. I'm really happy.
Trey, who could live anywhere in the world, has decided to keep his family in Queenstown.
Mm. Yeah, we're very happy down there. It's nice. My son takes a snowboard to school every Thursday.
Oh, jeez. Winter's coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Do you get Game of Thrones down there?
We have got BitTorrent. No, I've got 30 megabits up and down into my place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't go anywhere that I didn't have good bandwidth.
Yeah.
That's the prerequisite.
That's so slow.
Oh, shut up. What do you got? What do you have, home?
200 megabits up and down.
In your house?
Oh, in my house.
That's so cool.
That's more than we have in the studio.
What can I say? That's why it looks so good on the screen right now.
200 megabits. Who is it? Is it fiber?
It is fiber from Webpass, which is a local ISP in, and they only have a few buildings in Soma, but they do a spectacular job. They wired up the entire building, and that's one thing I don't mind spending money on.
So you know, you don't have to tell me, but I'm going to ask, how much?
$50 a month.
What? Shut up! Shut the front door! I hate you!
Oh, man.
You can come for dinner and try it out.
$50 a month for 200 megabits symmetric?
Yes, sir.
Is it only Omaha?
I'm moving into your building.
Is it only in Soma?
It's only in Soma.
I mean, I'm in Hayes Valley, and that's right near Soma.
It's not in Hayes Valley.
It has to be in your building.
Some of the newer buildings in Dogpatch, and, you know, it's like these guys are a small bootstrap company, and they're doing some amazing stuff.
Lisa, how much do we pay for 150 megabits symmetric? $5,000 a month? Yeah. What's our bandwidth bill? $4,500 a month. We could move to San Francisco and save $4,500.
Now, you would still pay as much money if you're a business.
Oh. But
if you're a residential customer, it's cheaper.
Data caps? Any data caps?
What is that?
They don't have... How could they have data caps? They couldn't even do that. You're already faster than the internet. You could download the whole internet at that speed.
Wow.
My Wi-Fi router is slower than the network.
So. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. I'm looking at webpass.net, San Francisco, Oakland, San Diego, Emeryville, and Berkeley. I'm moving to one. Forget Google Fiber. I'm moving there. It's not as fast, though. Yeah, might go to Austin instead. It's still pretty good.
But you're not going to Austin, dude.
No, I'm staying here.
And I'll never see you.
I'm going to Petaluma. This is it. I'm done. I'm stuck here.
It's
I don't care.
Hot enough there.
We got 150 megabits symmetric. I shouldn't complain. We have fiber into here. We actually had to have Comcast trench like all the way down the block, all the way down the street. So everybody in this area gets fiber thanks to us. Mm. You can thank me later. Mr. Ron Richards.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. What's your bandwidth at home?
I get 50 down from Comcast, unfortunately. They just upped it to 50. But I pay $69, so I'm paying more than home. Yeah.
Science is the new rock and roll, says his T-shirt.
It is.
It's awesome. Hosts about all about Android, which is every Thursday
night.
Tuesday. I always get the day wrong.
5 p.m. Pacific time.
I have too many shows now. I don't know when anything's on. It's great with Gina.
Gina and Jason and Chad. Allen. Yeah, it's great. It's a fun time. We got a fun little community.
Really, really, really good show. Yeah, it's one of our best shows, actually.
I'm proud of it. Yeah. I love it. It's nice a high job. Point of my week. So.
Dwight Silverman, he is, of course, the blogger at the Houston Chronicle, blog.cron.com/techblog. And every Wednesday night hosts a show called Tech, what is it, Reality Bites?
Technology Bites.
Technology Bites. Reality Technology Bites, too. Bites.
Yeah, 8 o'clock Central Time, and it's on kpft.org if you want to stream it. It's also available as a podcast from off of iTunes. And we also have our two websites now. We've got cron.com, and we've got our premium site, HoustonChronicle.com.
Awesome. And Home, we really ought to get webpass.net some better bandwidth because the site is down.
Oh, no.
The chat room's complaining. Their site went down. Well, that's what happens. You can have 200 megabits, but it's not going to save you from the Twit Army. Thank you, Twit Army, for joining us. We appreciate it. We couldn't do this show without you each and every week. We do it live, and we invite you to watch live right after this week in YouTube. It's right about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. But if you can't watch live, we make on-demand versions available after the fact of audio and video at twit.tv and, of course, wherever you get your internet content like iTunes, Zoom Pass, all that stuff, Xbox Pass, that kind of thing. Soon Google, what is it, Live, Google Play, what is it, Live Pass?
All Access.
All Access. All Isn't access. That the same name that Microsoft uses, All Access?
Oh, do they? I don't know.
Yeah, it seems
they
like
use that. Xbox Music.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
All Access is great, by the way. Google Music.
Do you like All Access? We need to talk about that. Cancel
my audio account, cancel my Spotify.
You know, I can't cancel Spotify until they have it on Sonos. As soon as they have it on Sonos, I'm done. Yeah. That's all I need. I do like
Spotify
it.
Spotify is on Sonos.
Spotify is. No, that's why I have Sonos. You like Sonos?
I love Sonos.
I know. I can't live without it. I have it in every room. But if Google doesn't put their all access on it, right, it ain't going to help me. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
Doing the Twit. Doing the Twit. All right. Doing the Twit, baby. Doing the Twit. All right.
I play the What's on Twit?
Rich. Oh, I forgot our promo. Hey, if you missed Twit, this is what you didn't miss. No.
What?
That's not the slogan. What is the slogan? Let's see what you missed if you didn't watch Twit this week.
Previously on Twit, Twit Live Specials.
Hi, I'm Tom Merritt. Welcome to our Twit special coverage of the Google I.O. announcement, where we expect to hear no product announcements. At least that's what Sundar Pichai said.
Let me extend our warmest welcome to the over 40,000 who joined us in 440 viewing parties across 90 countries worldwide.
Triangulation.
He bought two pizzas for 10,000 bitcoins.
10,000!
That's why they're million dollar pizzas. They are.
Holy gamoly.
Gizwiz.
Tiptoe through the tulips, garden, that is where I'll be, the lac table.
NSFW.
How you control purses, but you'll be running surfaces on your own if I ever catch you operating in batch mode.
Twit. It's like the screensavers in Silicon Spin had a baby.
Actually, we had 200,000 viewers during that Google I.O. coverage.
Wow.
Is that the largest we've ever had? Maybe the iPad announcement was bigger.
Did we crash your servers at the first iPad?
That's right. We could have had more, but the iPad crashed our servers. We fixed the servers. So. Yeah. 200,000.
Wow.
Simultaneous.
And that's a low count.
And that's our conservative count. So that's pretty good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You're amazing, Leo.
Congrats.
I take no credit for it whatsoever. It's all about the fabulous people we get on the show like you guys. Thank you so much. Gome, have a nice night.
All right. Good night, y'all.
Thanks, Om. Thanks,
bye,
Dwight. Bye-bye.
Bye, Om.
See you, bye.
Goodbye.
See ya. Thank you, Dwight.